All right, tonight is live.
Okay, we're live. I'm going to wait a minute or two. It usually takes a minute or two for everyone to be welcomed into the room. Okay, Jonathan, do you think everyone has made it online yet?
Yeah, just about.
That looks pretty good.
Yeah, about a dozen folks in attendance. I recognize some of the names. I think you're good to go.
Okay. In that case, I call to order the Hood River City Planning Commission meeting for October 5th, 2020. As usual, we'll start with our planning director's update. Dustin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We just have one matter on tonight. I don't have anything scheduled next week, but expect a, we wanted to leave that open just in case this took two meetings. Another than
when
that,
you say next week, you actually mean 2 weeks, right?
Excuse me, 2 weeks. Next meeting, regularly scheduled meeting we've left open. So nothing on right now for you.
Very well. In that case, let's get right into the hearing. I'm going to read the script for the hearing, and I apologize for this all being a little bit lengthy, but listen kind of carefully on this one because we're doing two things here. We're being asked both to do a rezone and to do a preliminary subdivision approval. And that's kind of a, we haven't done a lot of this combination, so listen carefully to the directions. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to call to order the October 5th, 2020 hearing of the Hood River Planning Commission. My name is Arthur Babbitts, and I will be presiding tonight as the chair of the Planning Commission. Let me begin with a brief description of tonight's process and a few disclosures required by state law. First, our function in these land use cases is to review the record for each application, take testimony in a hearing such as this, and then determine whether the application meets or does not meet the applicable approval standards of the Hood River Development Code. It is not our job to be more restrictive or lenient than these proposals, I'm sorry, these approval standards allow, but rather to interpret and apply the approval standards as written. If you have any question about what applicable approval criteria are in this case, they are listed and analyzed in the staff report that was issued for this application prior to tonight's hearing. They will also be explained as part of the staff presentation for this item. Second, we are required to render an impartial decision on each application. This means that we cannot have a personal financial stake or bias that would prevent us from making an impartial decision. Before I begin each item, I will call for disclosure of bias, ex parte contact, and conflict of interest from each commissioner. Anyone in the audience will then have an opportunity to question any of us about these disclosures. Our decision tonight on the subdivision will be final unless appealed to the City Council, which will hear the rezoning at a later date. To appeal our decision, you must participate either orally or in writing before the record closes on the item you're interested in. You must raise before us any issue which you wish to preserve for subsequent appeal to the City Council or LUBA, the Land Use Board of Appeals. You must also present to us any evidence which you wish the City Council or LUBA to see. Once we close the record on an item, that will end your ability to raise new issues or to present evidence. So just to be clear what's going on again, the rezone will actually be decided at the City Council. The subdivision, we will make a, we have the option of making a decision tonight. That decision is appealable to the City Council. So let me continue. Let me describe the order of events in the first hearing on tonight's agenda. We will first hear the staff report, which is a verbal rendition of the written report that was issued prior to tonight's hearing. Second, the applicant may present testimony. You can assume that we have read the application and the materials on the record, so please focus on any changes to the proposal or new information. We also want to hear from the applicant any objections to the analysis and to any proposed conditions in the staff report. Finally, we ask that if there's opponent testimony later on, the applicant should keep careful notes and in your rebuttal respond to the opponent testimony. Frequently, the public testimony on land use application pertains to how the development will function or what impact it will have. The applicant is often in the best position to answer those questions. Third, if anyone else in favor of the proposal may testify, then we will take neutral testimony or questions, neither for nor against. After that, we will accept testimony from anyone opposed to the proposal. Finally, the applicant has the final right of rebuttal. The applicant has the last word because the applicant has the burden of proving the compliance with mandatory approval criteria. After that, we will check to see if staff has any parting comments following the conclusion of all public testimony. Finally, after everyone interested in these matters has had a chance to testify, we will close the record, deliberate, and we may render a decision tonight. Our decision, however, is not final until it is reduced to writing and officially issued. Our decisions are final unless appealed to the City Council. To appeal one of our decisions, you need to participate orally or in writing before the close of the record. You must raise before us any issues you want to preserve for such an appeal. If you need additional time to prepare your testimony, you can ask for a continuance or the record, or that the record be kept open. If you want either of these options, you must make that request during the public testimony portion of the item which you're interested in before we close the record on that item. Some basic rules for presenting testimony. Only present testimony in the order I just recited. Begin with your name and mailing address. In this case, I understand because we're doing this over Zoom, we're not requiring you to give your address over the Zoom call, but we are asking you to make sure that the city has that address for the record. Please limit your testimony to applicable approval criteria identified in the staff report. Our decisions are governed quite strictly by those approval criteria, so you should tailor your testimony to those criteria. They are the only issues we can take into consideration. If you believe that other or different criteria apply, please identify those and explain why you think they apply. Failure to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence with sufficient specificity to allow us or the parties to respond to the issue will preclude an appeal to the City Council or LUBA based on that failure, based on that issue. Failure by the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues related to the proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow us to respond to the issue will preclude an action for damages in circuit court. Finally, we may set time limits on the presentation of testimony tonight, although there is no limitation on written testimony that may be submitted. That is the procedural introduction for tonight's hearing. If anyone has any questions about the proceeding as we go forward, feel free to ask them during the public testimony portion of the hearing. And I'm also going to ask if you have any questions now. So if you have questions, what we'd like you to do is to use the raise hand function at the bottom of your screen. And if you raise your hand, Jonathan will let me know that your hand is raised, and we will then make it possible for you to address us. So are there any questions about procedure? I'm not seeing any hands. Are you, Jonathan?
No, Chair, there are no hands.
Great. Okay, so I'm sorry, I'm just juggling a lot of screens here. Okay, we will now consider the item on tonight's agenda, file number 2020-13, an application by IBC Construction requesting an approval for an 18-lot subdivision and a zone map change. A quorum of the Planning Committee Commission is present, and I will now ask commissioners to disclose any ex parte contacts, conflicts of interest, and bias in this matter. Before I go to poll each of you, I will say that I know that each of you received an email from Mary King. That was also sent to staff, and they included that in the record. So I don't believe that you need to disclose that because that's already part of the record. So we've all had a chance to look at it, and all parties have seen that. So let's go ahead. Tina?
I have none.
Okay. Mark?
I have none.
Okay. Sue?
I have none.
And Megan?
I have none. Should I stay on?
Yes, I think that would be a good idea if you would be able to. We'd appreciate that. And then my disclosures, I have no bias, conflict of interest, or ex parte contact. I will state for the record that Doug Powery, who is an attorney in this matter, is a friend of mine. I did not know that he was even involved in this until I read this material, and I have not talked to him about this or frankly anything for quite some time. But just for the record, he is someone who I know quite well. So let's continue on. So those are our disclosures. Now I will ask if anyone in the audience would like to question any commissioner about their disclosure of ex parte contact, bias, or conflict of interest, or in other ways challenge the participation of any member of this commission. So again, we're going to do the hands raised thing. Please use the hand raising function if you would like to question us about anything. Oh, I see a hand. There's Mary King. Jonathan, can you turn Mary King on? There we go. And we even see a photo of you. Thank you, Mary. And please go ahead.
So in my written testimony, I did mention that Commissioner Bill Irving was a realtor when we bought our home.
Yes, and he's not here today, so I don't believe that that matters. We don't have to hear his explanation because he's not participating in this.
Okay, and in the future, then this issue would be brought up at the time of any future hearings?
That's correct. He would have to disclose. We go through this every, even if the hearing is continued, we would go through the same set of disclosures again, and he would have to answer those questions, and you would have a chance to question him at that point.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Mary King. Anyone else? Okay, I'm not seeing anyone else, so I think we can go forward. Is anyone in the audience? Would any commission member like to make any motion to disqualify any other commissioner from hearing this application? So I'll wait a minute on that. No challenges. Okay, next. So the next is the staff report. Just Dustin, before we get into the staff report, now we're operating on the city's website, the city's internet connection, which is a GorgeNet connection, which has had a lot of trouble in the last 24 hours. I'm also on GorgeNet. If something goes screwy during this hearing, Dustin, do you have a recommended course of action? Someone wants to testify, they're sitting there, the Zoom call disappears, what should they do?
Yeah, if we lose our meeting standing, we have a video notice of all the people, and we would try to contact all the participants who are here now, including the panelists, and let them know. We would make a recommendation for what a date and time certain in which we would reboot this meeting. So if we lose the meeting functionality, we would I would try to call a couple of you back on online or phone to get that meeting and continue to a date certain. We would provide notice. And I have a number of the contact information of not only you all, but of the participants. We would let them know a time and place certain in which we are going to continue this meeting.
Great, thank you very much. So everyone keep your fingers crossed that connection looks pretty good right now. And staff report, please, Dustin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, this request, file number is 2020-13. It is a rezone request from an R1 low density to standard density residential, and a preliminary plat of subdivision request for 18 lots. That subdivision request is contingent on the rezone. Our applicant is Integrity Building LLC out of Hood River off Multnomah. The owner of the property is Allison Foss. This location is three North 10 East 34, tax lot 200. It's a 3-acre site located approximately 300 feet north and west of 30th Street and Prospect. Again, the 3.14 acre parcel is currently zoned R1. The proposed zone is R2, which is the zoning that is to the north as well as the east of this property. To the west is more low density residential owned by the school district as well as Ross Brown. You've been provided a 62-page staff report that outlines the criteria that this request is evaluated under. There's 1703, which is our land use section, 1708, which outlines our map changes and comp plan criteria. 1709 is our procedures criteria. 1720 is our traffic and circulation criteria. 16-4, 16-8, and 16-12 are our preliminary plats of subdivision. Those are all for the record, all under the criteria in which we evaluate this request, and they're all embedded within the staff report. I will not go through them ad nauseum, but I'm gonna hit some high points to allow you to ask some questions. Again, R2 is the proposed zone. This is a standard single family, or excuse me, standard density residential. All the lots are required to be 5,000 square feet in an R2 zone. All must have some sort of frontage. 50 feet is the requirement for the development of these lots. All the lots as shown are all 5,000. They all have 50 feet of frontage. And they are laid out on the extension of Montello, or the extension of Prospect Avenue, which is kind of a natural grid progression that occurs along the east. The proposal from 1708 has to meet a number of criteria in order for it to be approved. In the criteria request, I outlined some of the findings regarding our goals from the comp plan, including water and air resources, natural hazards, recreational needs. Some of the keys that occur in this and that I wanted to call your attention to show up on page 6. This is an important element from goal 8, which is a recreational needs goal, as well as, and it overlaps with goal 10, which is the housing needs goal. It's probably one of the most significant goals impacting this. When we look at, I pulled some of the neighborhood layouts and neighborhood frameworks that you all discussed in when discussing the west side. It shows this property in context of some future and planned development, both in the school, both the look of future alignments of Mount Adams and Sherman and Park. One of the key criteria, this calls out and suggests a walkable connection between the school and the neighborhood would occur through this area. And really that comes into play when we start looking and discussing its street networks. I think one of the key elements that we talked about as staff in the pre-application meeting was limiting the number of curb cuts that these units would have. And the applicant has obliged by proposing a private alley entrance. That allows for the sidewalk extensions in the streets to have a fewer number of breaks in them. It also allows a lot of curb length to allow for access for residents. And I think that was an important urban design connection. We're not gonna anticipate a series of garages facing the road. This allows an opportunity for kind of a forward-facing design that is really kind of in line with the traditional neighborhood designs, the TND or the smart growth designs. And I think that is that's an important opportunity when we look at infill and we look at starting to build, you know, some idea of compatibility and layout. The street grid should be compatible. The buildings themselves should be somewhat compatible by the way they're laid out. In continuing through another goal, an important goal is goal 12, which is the transportation goal. Since it is a rezone, the applicant is required to meet and perform some analysis and has performed analysis under the transportation planning rules that otherwise known as the TPR, with TPR findings. This basically says, this is a state level rule that says, when you change the zone, you should not be negatively or you should be accommodating or evaluating for the potential traffic impacts. Now, those findings are supported in this by a traffic memo, a traffic impact analysis prepared by Lancaster, which has been submitted. I provided some of the highlights from the anticipated trip analysis and the expected trip counts that would occur as a result of this development. Within that, generally, the findings are consistent with the TPR findings and conditioned where necessary in order to meet goal, what we think is goal 12 analysis, as well as the TPR findings. Again, into process, the idea that one of the ideas is subdivisions as well as rezones need to be processed in a transparent way. That's why we're having a public hearing. That's why we analyze this. This has a number of discretionary land use decisions. And therefore the neighbors are as well as staff are entitled to speak and participate here, that the work is shown, that these decisions are backed by findings of fact. So we're here tonight. Planning Commission is requested to evaluate the subdivision in context of the subdivision rules. They're empowered to make decisions on that, as well as requested to make a recommendation on the rezoning itself, and send that recommendation on to City Council, who will be really the final arbiter and decision maker of the rezone. So this is the first of two hearings that we have. Really, that's some of the high level overview. I'd be happy to take any questions now. If there's anything in particular that you want to speak to, I know we have a number of residents who communicated to me as well as through written comment. All those comments are provided in attachment D. They've been provided to the applicant as well. So they should have the opportunity. I see the applicant is on to provide some details regarding their proposal, how it meets the criteria within the code. And again, we're here to answer any questions or help facilitate discussion that you may have.
Dustin, can you clarify the tentative nature of any decision we might make on the subdivision?
So subdivision, one of the conditions the subdivision would be contingent on the rezone. So under the current zoning regulations, you could not create those lots. That's the interrelation. So you have the opportunity to make a decision on the subdivision. It would have to be contingent on the property being rezoned.
So we can make what is effectively a final decision on the subdivision, but that would include a condition which, if not met, means that the subdivision is null and void.
Right, that would be, conditioned approval.
Okay, I'm sorry, Mark, I think I saw you starting to raise your hand.
Yeah, so two questions for you, Dustin. As we get into this, I'm curious, there was some feedback from the public around drainage, and so this is a preliminary site plan review. I'm wondering how far we take the drainage discussion in light of that is a preliminary site plan review. That's one question. And then the second question has to do with the alleyway. I don't know if this is the right time to ask this, but an alleyway that has one open end to it and whether that's of any concern. Maybe the applicant can clarify that, but I didn't see that covered in the staff report. Oh, can I hear you right now?
Yep.
There we go. Drainage.
By way of stormwater, it is a preliminary review, so we're looking for not final approval and compliance with the stormwater engineering standards. But we review and we ask our engineers to review it on a preliminary basis and to see if it's feasible. So, the analysis of some of the estimated volume and location, we look at it at that level. So if there is a high, and we, before we got to this, we actually had some concerns on the stormwater report is submitted, and we asked the applicant to make revisions to the plan. This is actually not the first set of plans that we've seen. These are revised sets. These sets actually reflect new engineering comments. So the commentary in attachment E is our engineer's comments and findings of, they believe it's feasible for this to be accomplished. So the stormwater criteria are in the plans. There is findings that how it should be accomplished, but definitely we are not expecting a final stormwater approval on this.
So Dustin, before you move on to the second question on that, the neighbors have asked what seems to be a very reasonable question, and we get this question a lot. How do we know that people will actually follow through on this? So can you explain the process by which we would be sure that we go from the plan that we have before us, it's just a tentative plan that is just deemed plausible. How do neighbors know that when this thing is finally built, that they don't have water flooding into their crawl spaces.
And so by way of procedure, this plan is looking at the land use aspect and some of the feasibility. What is required of the applicant and what shows up in the conditions of approval is that post any decision that's made here, if approved at the land use level, the applicant is required to submit and design final engineering documents and specifications that would meet the City of Hood River engineering and design standards. These have to do with flow rates and volume, detention, and water quality, and how each site is designed to that. With that, and that is reviewed by our professional engineering staff, who evaluates against that. They then would grant a separate approval for final engineering based on an engineer's finding, both reviewed engineer and design engineer, that it met the Hood River engineering design standards for stormwater. Then they proceed, after that occurs, they will be on site and they will do on-site observations of this construction in compliance with the resident engineer and design team to ensure not only that the design is it's not designed accordingly, but then that the design is implemented and executed on site to comply with the plans. That's really the process in which this occurs. So we take this from kind of a public participation process and it goes into a less discretionary technical process where engineers are proposing proposing designs and engineers are evaluating those based on high level criteria.
So Mark asked two questions, but I looked like Tina has a question concerning that first subject. So Tina, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I had essentially the same question as Mark, but so that's a good explanation, Dustin, thank you. But I guess because the testimony or the written testimony has already sort of expressed that this is a clear concern of neighbors, is there any process for the neighbors to be able to see the or comment on or review that final stormwater management plan, and also I think the site grading erosion plan? Is there a process where they'll be able to see those reports or comment on those reports?
They'd have the opportunity to see them. They could submit records requests and they become available, but by way of participation, they could submit comments, but when it gets to the engineering, it's really not a public and open process. The materials are available for review and they could comment on them, but the engineering staff and the civil engineering staff are not necessarily soliciting public input and requesting that the public participates. It's really more of a technical review, less of an open review. That's what we do on the front side.
So their comment period, this is the time they should speak up, or if this is continued, the next hearing, and then after that it's essentially they can review the documents, but if they have concerns or questions, now is the time.
Right, now is the time for the public participation. Once we get into technical drawings, the public is not really a participant in that, but they have access to them, so they could review them and they could they would have that opportunity. But when it comes to commentary, engineering and is not looking for comments. They're not putting this out as a public process. There's no notification. So now is the time. This is the public participation time.
Okay.
Thank you for clearing that up. And Mark had a second question. Mark, could you refresh our memory?
Yeah, I think my concern is I like the idea of the alleyway, but it's an alleyway with an entrance at only one end and bollards at the other. So how does that work? Does that comply with sort of vehicle access? Because I don't think we were going to have an access straight off 30th, right? So any concerns with that?
Yeah, the emergency vehicle access at that end comes from engineering. And as far as planner speak, I like the idea of a through alley, but I think they have concerns about site visibility and in a narrow curb cut there. By way of entering this onto 30th Street, but we're starting to build that alley and grid pattern back. All the vehicles have, or excuse me, all the lots have frontage onto a public street. So really, by way of emergency access, responders, neighbors, residents, none of them are dependent on the alley for anyone other than the residents themselves. So I know some people we've heard state that they like that the alley was closed because it kind of gives the residents a little bit of exclusivity without without having cut through traffic. I like through traffic. I think it's healthy, but I think this one provides a little bit of both. It has a little bit of alley that allows the residents the access back there, but it doesn't promote a lot of traffic. So there, no one's gonna really cut through. You're gonna get to the bollard end. But when you work this into the grid street pattern, you still have the streets, all the houses and all the lots still front on the streets. So we still have that primary frontage. And that was really the only way that the private alley was gonna even be able to be allowed was if these things still had street frontage on them. They couldn't rely on that exclusively. Now to the north on Montello, the six lots to the north, they all back to the single family homes that front on Eugene. All those houses are going to have front access driveways. They will not have access. Their exclusive access will be on the Montello, and the backyards will back up to the existing. That's just a function of how the street spacing works and how it really, the neighborhood kind of lays out now and how this piece fits into it.
Dustin, you used the term private alley. Isn't it a dedicated right-of-way?
This alley is not to be dedicated as a right-of-way. It is going to have a public easement on it. And I think the conditions of approval mention public access easement.
So clarify for us what is allowed, what the public is allowed. For example, can people bike through there? Can they walk through there other than residents?
I think that's the key feature of the public access easement. It would be to allow public access, but it's not under separate fee title like a right-of-way, and it would be privately maintained.
So I also saw, you're talking about the east-west alley. I saw someplace in the documents, the north-south pavement or whatever it is that's on the west side of this development. I saw one place where that was referred to as an alley also. Did I misread that, or is that considered an alley, or is it a half of a street development?
That is actually an alley. At the westernmost end, there's 20 feet of right-of-way that will be fee-owned by the city. What that does, this has been brought up before, it breaks up the block size, so we don't end up with a super block, a long, unwalkable block. This provides the opportunity of the private alley to offload into a single space. And it also provides us an opportunity to break up the blocks. So we have walkable blocks, we have shorter blocks. They become a little more what planners like to call the human scale. And this fits into some of the block length requirements that show up in our subdivision code as well. How this block was actually able to maintain and meet the block length criteria that we uphold.
Okay, so it provides pedestrian access, bike access, but it's also vehicular access to the alleyway.
Right, and that also provides a turnaround too for emergency vehicles. That north-south alley will provide, technically you could back a fire truck up the distance. This provides a better opportunity for a turnaround within this subdivision.
This is before Eugene is extended, or I'm sorry, is that Montello? I forget which street we're looking at.
Before Montello or Prospect continue, and that shows up in the future street plan that you've been provided. So one of the conditions was that this property, there is future redevelopment opportunity, so they are required to provide not only a future street plan, but a redivision plan to accommodate and think about future uses. That is in your packet as well in attachment A. So what it does is it shows how does this lot fit into a larger development scheme, and the applicant extended their future redevelopment plan, or excuse me, their future street plan, to what would be that you could see the beginnings of Mount Adams as realigned, Sherman to the north, and Main Street to the south. So it kind of, it looks to the west on how does this thing start fitting into future development schemes as contemplated.
Right, and that's on attachment A on page, that looks like drawing number 8. I don't know what page it is.
It's a huge drawing.
Yeah, the big wide one, yep.
It would be, excuse me, I believe it's about page 36 or 37.
38 is what I have. 38. Is
38 of 150.
Yep. Great. Thank you. Any more questions from commissioners before we go on to our next step? Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, Tina, you're muted, so unmute.
Yeah, I have another one. In these documents I have seen, and maybe this is premature for tonight, but I have seen references to these 18 lots being single family homes and seen them listed as duplexes. Is that something we are going to talk about tonight, or has that been decided, or is that?
There's both references in there from the applicant's material. And I think one of the conditions from staff is that the future street plan and maximum build out should reflect a future division. So the applicant represented, and they call it the worst case scenario, and that's the term used by the traffic engineer. The R2 zone does allow duplex development. So we felt it was appropriate that that would be evaluated in the worst case scenario. There is an opportunity in R2 zones for townhouse divisions that would allow these to be subsequently divided. And I think that was something that is mentioned in the traffic analysis, but there's a couple points of inconsistency there. We could have the applicant speak to that, but I think as laid out in this is the initial 18 lots as shown in some of the applicant's drawings that you would expect, or I would expect to see the potential development for townhouses and duplexes.
So just to be clear, subdivision is simply the process of creating these lots, and what happens on those lots is subject to future procedures the fact that there are pretty pictures showing single family houses or anything else is not controlling. Once the lot lines are drawn, it's an R2 lot, which could then be used for anything that an R2 lot is allowed to be used for. Is that fair?
Okay. Okay. So we're talking about in terms of the traffic implications, but we're not actually talking about what's going to go on those lots otherwise tonight. Correct?
Correct. I mean, they would be subject to the R2 zones. Right now, R2 could allow duplex or townhouse. That may change in the future, just like R1 may change. So
okay.
The bundle of rights that they have come with the R2 zoning and the lot itself. So if we're going to make R2 lots, there's the requirements that are in place today are the requirements that the lots are created, not in which future development is evaluated.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions before we move on? Okay. So let us continue. That was the staff report. Staff report followed by applicant's testimony. Sorry, folks. I do have several things going on at the same time here. Hold on a second. I need to turn off my notifications because people are telling me all about Monday Night Football. So let me turn that off so I'm not bothering you folks.
And Mr. Chair, we had at least one or two applicants on. And I see they're back now. They dropped off and they're back. So we do have Mike Kettler and Sean Wagner representing applicant as well as counsel, who I think is going to sit by unless we need applicant counsel weighing in.
Great. In that case, I'm going to ask that the applicant provide whatever testimony they care to make as I try to figure out how to turn off my notifications. And do we know, now I lost Dustin. Oh, there you are, Dustin. Do we know if the applicant is, oh, there's, I see Sean and Mike are both promoted now. You're both muted. If you can unmute. Sean and Mike, we're seeing you as muted. So, there's Mike, okay. Mike, it looks like you're in your car. Oh, there, you're in a truck, okay. We're not hearing you though. Mike, we're not hearing you, Mike.
Mike, you might be on Bluetooth.
Yeah, we're showing you as unmuted, but we're not actually hearing you.
Can you hear me okay now?
We hear you now, thank you. Go ahead, Mike.
Perfect. Hopefully that's okay. Let me start by saying thank you for taking a look at the project. Dustin, do I have the ability to share my screen?
Should be able to. Mike.
You should have the ability. We should
Dustin,
give
you are muted now.
Yep.
Oops. I see a screen sharing starting, so I guess the answer is yes. There you go. You're on our screen now. We're seeing you, Mike.
Perfect.
We're seeing your calendar.
Let me.
We're not hearing you though.
Can you still hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear Mike. Yep.
Keep going. I'm not hearing anybody now. Is anyone?
Nature's Way.
Yeah. So hopefully you can hear me.
Okay. I see Mark's lips moving. I see Mike's lips moving. I'm not hearing anybody. What's going on here?
That's on you.
I can hear everybody.
Can you speak so we figure out what's going on here?
Yeah, I think
I'm not hearing you either.
I think we've lost Arthur here for a minute. So, Arthur, you may want to check. You may want to check out and check back in.
I'll start, and hopefully Arthur gets connected in.
We see only a portion of your image, all right? So we just see the word nature, i.e. and half of
it. Okay, I'm being told by Dustin I need to hang up and come back, so I'm going to disconnect.
So can you change the resolution of your screen?
Yeah, let me see. How would we do that? Can you see the whole screen now?
No.
No or yes?
Not yet.
No.
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 Looks like the resolution changed for the worse, but we can kind of see the top right of the image. Top left, I think, of your page.
Yeah, we'll try to do this again.
Mike, you have the opportunity to zoom to fit the window. There's a zoom to fit.
There it is.
Zoom to fit.
There we go. You must be on dial-up.
It's low bandwidth. I've got audio now too, though.
Okay. I mean, I think you can convey the picture. It's not the best resolution.
The pictures are all everything you have in your packet.
Yep.
Okay. You should have all of this in your packet. The big goal here is for us to just present from, you know, our side of our goal, which if you take a look at our goal is to provide housing for Hood River. We won't build these lots to sell them. Our intention will be to build them out. That will be our intention, obviously, you know, with the best, you know, intention at hand. I can't promise that will be the case, but that will, you know, is our intention. So, you know, our real goal here is to kind of tackle, you know, the problem at hand, which is housing in Hood River. You know, I will not say, especially by the time this is done, this will not probably be even close to a affordable or obtainable housing price point, which, you know, breaks my heart and is sad. But I just, the amount of infrastructure work that we will provide for the city and doing all the improvements, it will probably not be, you know, this piece. But I think it's something for us to still be positive about, because even if this is not an obtainable housing price and this kind of meets, you know, our median housing, you know, right in that 490 to 550 range where things are selling this year, which are up 7% since last year, is something that we should all at least consider and, you know, take on a part of this as a positive element, which is providing inventory. Because without any inventory, right, the supply will outweigh the demand, or sorry, the demand will outweigh the supply significantly. So house pricing will be able to do exactly what it's doing now, where if you have any available lot in any available house, you can ask any available price. So this will help bring in more housing, which will help, you know, hopefully bring the supply up in some small portion. You know, not trying to paint it as like a, you know, a Robin Hood style, you know, project where it's an amazing thing. But if we don't act quickly in Hood River and produce more housing, then we will continue this problem. You know, the fact that we can produce 18 lots with an R2 subdivision versus 12 with an R1 is a significant bump in the positive direction towards affordable housing. Not, once again, saying that this will be affordable housing, but the opportunity to provide more density, even in a small fashion, will help take pressure off of other pieces and other parcels that could provide for obtainable housing. So, you know, kind of like the last time we were in front of you guys, we looked at a Wasco piece, which is goal is to be at the obtainable housing. So doing projects like this allow to kind of balance the equation so we can do other projects that work towards the obtainable housing. You know, so that's, I think, the big goal that we would like you to look at today, right, is really focusing on, you know, what's going to be basically voted in, which is the opportunity for a rezone and the subdivision itself. We'll talk a little bit about the details and concerns of the neighbors and probably a couple questions that I heard you guys on the panel address. And I think the big issue in a project like this is stormwater. And I think it's something that has become the crux of every subdivision. And so as we have done multiple subdivisions in Hood River and Oregon, it's something that won't get taken lightly. It's not something, in my opinion, that the city will dismiss on behalf of the city or dismiss on behalf of the neighbors down drainage from us to the north. So, you know, I think this is something that today is a good concern for them to ask, but it's not a concern because the standards that we'll be held to will be significantly greater than what they're probably assuming they will be. They'll be greater than the standard at which the subdivision they all live in and all of the housing to the north were held to when they did their subdivision. So, you know, the other reason for this kind of style build also addresses, you know, kind of a match to the neighborhood is the goal of what we're trying to do. So if you look at, and hopefully you can see this, and this is all in your packet. Well, you can see this side, but I think the thing that's important for us to see here, so this would be the prospect, and then this would be the neighboring homes to the north. The way we're going to design and do this subdivision, what they see in the preliminary gradings, I'll jump back one slide, right? What they're seeing in the preliminary gradings is a concern to them because what they see is a build site and then a significant hill. The grading profiles at this early of a concept don't really show true light to what the concept will be in the future. So the neighbors will not see a, you know, 60-foot tall mound of dirt sloping into their backyards, which probably at this glance, that's what they see and that's what their concern is. There's no way that design would be able to be passed and approved by the engineering department once we get through this phase and onto the next phase. So this slide is probably important for everyone to understand the way this will look in the future is you'll have Prospect and Montello for both sides of the street. You're going to have a driveway entrance or you'll have an alleyway entrance. The important piece to see here is the elevation that the house will create as its own buffer from moving from street side to backyard. So backyards will line up within a pretty, you know, close profile, plus or minus 2 feet. So you could see some retaining wall just to protect each person's backyard to have, you know, kind of the best function of use. You know, I think on the plan it says 5 feet. I wouldn't think in my professional opinion that it'll be 5 feet, but I'm not going to, you know, say, you know, exact footage at this point. So, but I think the thing that's very important to see here is that this lot, right, and this grading plan will force a design and a build with this in mind. You know, and this is obviously not the lot or the build. This is just a concept of what could be built on an R2 and how could you prove that this lot is buildable and what is the means to making this lot. So this is probably the most important slide for people to look at. And this is in your packet of the staff report. And if you go into looking at the stormwater is a concern for the neighbors, and I understand that. I think it's not something we take lightly. We respect it to its fullest. But I can almost promise that once we're through this phase, which is only to talk about it should the rezone go through and should the subdivision go through, the next phase, which is engineering, stormwater will be held to such a standard that they'll probably see an improvement in the stormwater release from this lot onto the neighboring properties. Also, a state standard is we can't produce any more stormwater that's leaving our property. And this is probably something to note, and this is in the engineering findings, and this will come out in the actual engineering process of approval. We can't produce any more stormwater off of our property onto the downstream property than is already existing now. So if we increase the CFS because of the subdivision, we're not allowed by state law and municipal city of Hood River code to produce any more water downstream. So it's illegal for us to take water, add the volume and dump it onto the neighboring properties at a higher rate than it's already existing in its natural state. So I think that in its own should, if it doesn't already with just the design, that in its own is the kind of the comfort and the requirement that we're held to, that the neighbors should have some security and feel relief in. And so, you know, I think I'll probably kind of end there. And if you have questions, we'll come back to it. To address the alleyway, you know, this is just to get to this phase. It's been over a year working with the city to build a concept that works for the city. Things like an alleyway entrance that the city of Hood River is really starting to focus on to have. You know, this concept has been built working with the city, not working against the city. So as we've worked with the city, this is going to create a better, I mean, some of the comments that we've heard back from neighbors are, you know, I guess pedestrian path, right away, bike path. This design is to help slow traffic down. This is a street design that's supposed to allow safer pedestrian, you know, right away, safer pedestrian, bike path. So the design that you see is intended for that exact thing, is to build a better neighborhood than just, you know, a simple, cheap, fast, clean cut subdivision. I mean, there's a lot of, I guess, thought and input from our side and from the city side to where we land today to present this to you. Also, you know, the concern is a single entrance alleyway. Is that a concern to the fire department and the public works, or the engineering department, they've all had their input in and they've actually worked together really well. We've moved the alleyway 3 or 4 times because fire marshal had a few, you know, inputs that he wanted for requirements. Same with engineering and public works. So this concept has already, I wouldn't say, yeah, I'll word it as has made them happy with the design, with their input in place. So I guess, you know, to kind of sum this up, the goal of this is to provide housing, which is the need for Hood, you know, Hood River at this time. And hopefully, you know, we can stick to those points and facts of this and not get distracted in others. So I don't know how to pass off my screen. Hopefully that passes it off and everybody can take over.
You did. You did. We now have our regular screen back. So can I take it that that concludes the applicant's testimony?
Yeah, unless you have okay, questions.
They call you back. Actually, let me start by asking if there are any questions. Do any commissioners have questions for the applicant? Sue, go ahead. You're muted.
Okay. I really like the project overall, but I have concern about the stormwater just because it was brought up so much by the neighboring residents. And one thing you just mentioned was that these standards now are higher than they used to be when those developments were built. Can you,
because
I don't know that history, can you tell me what changed in them and what makes them more stringent? That's one question. And then the second one you mentioned was the fact that I guess by law, you have to make sure that you don't have any more water coming off than what's already there, which sounds like it's already a problem for them. And you also simultaneously mentioned that you may even make it better. But getting back to the idea that by law, you can't make it any worse, that does happen. What recourse is there for neighboring residents?
So I guess I'll address the first question, which okay. is since their subdivision, the improvements have gone up. So the way we measure stormwater now has changed because the standard in previous subdivisions, say, you know, 15, 20 years ago when Fox Hill went in, the standards allowed for kind of a loose interpretation of what was the CFS coming through your property and how you increased the volume of CFS leaving your property. So the way we measure those now has changed. Also, the amount of CFS allowed to not be detained or retained from our subdivision has also changed. Also, something that's handled now in stormwater is the treatment of water. So no longer do we just pass through stormwater. We also, any water that has moved through a street or anything of that way, a driveway that's not groundwater needs to be treated before it leaves the property. So now, and this is kind of that hard measurable area for me to explain to you, but this is where I will say it will improve because we're going to add things like streets, driveways, houses. That water will be now collected and moved into our own treatment detention pond that will pass it through. So you won't see as much sheet flow as they've seen being downhill from a blanket field. So hopefully that kind of explains the mm-hmm. first section. And then the second question is the engineering process is not as simple as we hand them a packet in a week and then they hand it back and say, you're good to go. We have to prove, so our engineer and our geotech will have to prove before we can even get to design approval of plan to get to actual construction of subdivision, we have to prove that our design will not increase and it handles our water flow. So that's a pretty extensive process alone that they have to do. So the recourse of if it were not to, increase, so if it were to increase, is probably the best way to say it, if it were to increase any kind of CFS of offflow, they would not approve the subdivision. So we could not move to final plat because this is just preliminary plat. We could not move to final plat. Final plat is not approved until we've actually constructed the subdivision. At that time, the engineering department, Public Works, comes out and they'll review the actual physical construction. Once they've reviewed that and see that, yes, what the engineer and the geotech has worked together to design is actually built in place and it is functioning, that's when they'll give their approval and then they'll sign the final plat. So we won't be able to get to that final plat until we've proven that. So I guess the recourse is you can't get approval without, you know, proving that you're not increasing CFS. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, Mark, I have one quick question. Mark. So I'm looking at, you sort of flashed it on the screen. When you take, let's say, beyond this neighborhood and continue to the west, it mm-hmm. seemed to me that your design had an easement. Was it an easement that goes south to north down the hill past the sort of the double block here? And then when it gets to the single row, lots 1 through 6, it does a jog and goes onto land that isn't part of this project. Did I see a drawing? Can you just describe what that's all about? Is that a...
Yeah, so that's...
I can bring that up for you if you want to have an AV.
Sure.
Okay. It wasn't actually that drawing. It was in the context of the rest of the potential build out. But I think that's what you're showing right there. Yeah,
this drawing indicates the proposed location of the stormwater pond at the north and westernmost corner, as well as an east-west offside easement that would convey from the pond to Henderson Creek.
Yeah, so this might not have been the drawing we were looking at, but this is enough of a visual to explain it. So part of our pond, we need to account for 25-year, 50-year, and 100-year stormwater events, which needs to have an overflow right-of-way for the water to release itself back to the natural drainage. So what this easement speaks to is that overflow drainage. So if something were to happen in a 100-year storm event, our pond or our stormwater does not relieve itself into the neighbors to the north downstream. So a part of what the engineering department of Hood River required is for us to complete a part of the DP10 capital improvement. And because we can't do the improvements on the neighboring property, this is depicting the easement we're going to get for a temporary temporary overflow onto the neighbor's property and then through the school district's property, and then releasing that overflow into Henderson Creek. And that's a part of the conditions that this all needs to be addressed before final approval of plat and built. And what this basically would do would give us that access to Henderson Creek from our pond. I think the image that you looked at was in our kind of future cast of future improvements. What we did is we showed the concept of, okay, so when this property gets developed, are we thinking enough of ahead, or what are we going to do with our overflows at that time? In this project, we're already doing a few of the capital improvement projects, DP10. This lot here, which is owned by the neighbor to the west, when that goes in for subdivision, they'll also be required to continue DP10. We've showed how our pond in that slide that you were looking at earlier, our pond will then connect into those improvements, and it flows right with what the city is requiring. So I think the things you were looking at was basically how the future connectivity will exist, just to present that, you know, we're creating a part of a solution, not creating a problem for the neighbor when all of a sudden they go to do a subdivision and now they have this easement across their property that doesn't work.
Thank you.
Mike, if you could just clarify, will you actually be creating that swale that's shown in that drawing, or will you, or is that something that is created when the future development happens?
That swale will be created at this subdivision, and it's a, you know, it's one of those pieces that the engineering department will tell us the requirements that we'll need in that. At this point, we've presented a swale. They might require it to be piped. Those are the details at this point that aren't sussed out. What we at this phase basically need to show that, yes, we know we're responsible for the easement. We know we're responsible for the construction. Our pond can't just terminate onto the neighbor's property to the west. We will have to, at our expense, take it from our property all the way to Henderson Creek.
So I guess just to put a finer edge on this, and it's always indelicate to be asking these questions, but you can certainly imagine a neighbor who is directly to the north, directly below a pond which is being created, is going to wonder that with all best intentions, we can have a massive economic disruption, you can be bankrupt and not complete this project. What can they be assured of in terms of what state, assuming it's a subdivision goes through, what state that stormwater might be left in before any development happens?
I guess that's pretty arbitrary to answer. So nothing is hooked up. I guess probably the easiest way to answer that is until it's final approval, the turned on button doesn't happen. We don't flip the switch to on until the very last day of approval. So if something were to happen and the project doesn't get performed midway through, nothing is connected to that pond. So it's not like it would be 50% built, but you get 100% of volume coming into this pond. The stormwater is not connected until the very end. And that's actually part of the testing process, which goes back to the earlier question of they'll come out and make sure everything is met to the standard. Once they approve that standard, then they say, okay, now we can turn the on button and actually, run flow for the stormwater.
Great. No, that was exactly the question I was asking. And you can understand in Hood River's history, there have been cases where folks downstream have been left holding the bag because of developers upstream doing things that they were not around to clean up afterwards. So, it's completely understandable why people would be concerned. You've described the way the process works now, which hopefully is kind of a more reliable process to result in better comfort for the folks downstream.
Yeah, I think, do you mind if I add one thing to that really quickly?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the other thing is you just addressed it, is we've learned a lot from future mistakes in subdivisions. A part of the process now is we will mitigate before we even do any work on the process, we'll mitigate any erosion control, stormwater control in a temporary solution throughout the whole process of construction. So anything during construction that happens, whether we have to pause for weather or any sort like that, we have to mitigate all of that upstream and uphill for the neighbor. So if we get stuck midway through, they're not left with a problem that they have to go make a temporary solution until somebody takes over. Yeah, those standards have also increased because we've learned from cases, like you said, where a subdivision gets stalled halfway through and then everyone around the subdivision stuck with solving a problem that's not theirs. Yeah, those are addressed in the standards, which is a condition of the engineering approval also that we'll have to design and prove before they'll even give us that approval to start the construction.
Thank you, Mike. Any other questions for the applicant before we continue?
I have one.
Go ahead, Megan.
What, Mike, you referenced improving biking and walking. What are the connection improvements?
Yeah, so going back to the future street improvement, our through streets also have not positive connectivity. They have some misalignments, which will help with, the connectivity into future biking and pedestrian pathway to move west with our subdivision. Also the design of is not as many driveway cuts. Now to the north, we are limited just with layout. It wasn't by intention. It was just more by lack of opportunity. But the items to the south, the lack of street cuts basically just comes down, to a lack of opportunity for pedestrian and traffic from, vehicles to interface at multiple intersections. So that might not be answering your question, but I think it, hopefully it does. I don't know if that was where you're going with your question.
No, I was missing any cross sections in the attachment A, and I mean, this is a chicken and egg, but the TSP right now, the Montello Bike Boulevard or Neighborway ends at Rand right now. And it seems like that entire neighborhood is just completely missing any sort of biking, well, plans. So I don't know if there's been discussions on that Montello corridor continuing through. I know it ends at a certain point. It would have to connect through Prospect. There's not a clear east-west route where the street continues, but I can imagine one day that that Montello Prospect corridor will be important.
Especially with the school built there. We might want to get Dustin to step in to kind of explain where we are on this whole thing, because Mike hasn't been in all the discussions on this.
Yeah, I think for me to answer it, probably the best of way I can answer it as the applicant, we're working with the city to address kind of what you just spoke about there. Our design is looking towards the future TSP, the future Alignment D, to not design something today that in 6 months to a year, 2 years, where the city starts to move their TSP and all of a sudden we've built something that goes against that. This concept and this design is working right into that flow of exactly what you're talking about with, you know, linking pedestrian path from existing east neighborhoods out west, you know, in pedestrian paths versus having to, you know, move all the way up into May Street and then that's where your alignment is. So this should provide neighborhood flow for pedestrian and bike path right away, moving into the future TSPs that the city is designing.
Okay.
On that same issue, I'm sorry, Mike, on that same issue, you also used the term, I think you talked about slowing traffic or calming traffic, that was part of an element of design. I didn't catch quite how you were doing that.
That's more in the future development street. So how, I guess R2, I mean, this is such a small section of development, right? It's hard to do much in these two, two small roads, but I guess where they flow into is, you know, the future build of Montello and Prospect that works its way down into even Eugene. And so, you know, these aren't built as thoroughway streets. And then also in our design of the future right of ways is streets then connect back to other streets. And so that's going to create, you know, a calmer flow versus, you know, 8 major grids moving through the west side. They're going to work their way through back into their arterial collectors.
Okay, Dustin, I see you reappeared.
I'm going to do a screen share again. This is from page 6 in your packet is provided. And I'm hoping that it worked.
We see it.
Okay, so this is the neighborhood concept plan from the neighborhood frameworks, kind of the first step when we looked and we were evaluating growth in the area. The parcel, if you can see my cursor, development area is right here. This would be Montello and Prospect. You can kind of see in the background the existing development pattern. So looking at it in context of where future trail connections are, Henderson Creek Trail, Ridgeline Trail, you see kind of how this thing situates there with the extension of the development pattern and kind of how we are looking at PEDs. Also, all the streets, all the frontage improvements anticipate full sidewalk, tree lawn, also the extension of frontage improvements along 30th as well. So having full frontage improvements and all the walkways not broken up by driveways is really a big PED amenity. Both our local streets, which are anticipated to be shared for users, 50-foot right-of-way, with no curb cuts should hopefully develop some of that traffic calming, narrowing the using a local street. But frontage on all the improvements, frontage on 30th, which now is lacking, expansion of the grid. The shortness of the block is also a traffic calming measure. Long uninterrupted blocks that run for long periods end up building momentum. So part of that alley and part of that grid actually does build in some traffic calming. But this is where the development is shown up in context when we think about future connections, future routes.
So Megan, I'm sorry to hijack your question, but I'm just trying to understand exactly what you're asking. And on this drawing, Dustin, I see the this does not have Mount Adams connecting to May Street in our packet in the packet CB, I think it was. It does show the connection. Remind me what the plan is on that, or is that subject to finalization in the TSP?
So one of the conditions that shows up in there, you see alignment D here. Actually, in the future street plan that provided by the applicant, which I'm afraid to switch screens because it's a really heavy one and it freezes up on the screen here. You see new alignment D showing up on the farthermost western regions. So you do see a grading plan and alignment D of Mount Adams show up in that, as well as what would essentially be a connector street serving the school site itself. And that kind of shows up in this gray, on this gray heavyweight line here. That is more of, we call that old Mount Adams alignment.
Right.
And so that's kind of shown as a, again, as a connector, as these streets develop. So the future
street. You can certainly imagine how that, the development of that grid is going to be critical to the walkability and bikeability of this area.
Yeah, I mean, and hence this future street plan and its importance, so.
No worries, Arthur, on hijacking it, because I still, what I got excited about with potential traffic calming is stormwater retention infrastructure and traffic calming work great together, especially when the road or the street is designed as like a chicane where you have a stormwater retention swale, another one and another one, and the street ends up doing this. And so it works great because you solve your stormwater problem or you help solve it, but you also create a slower traveling speed for vehicles. And it just adds interest to the street. That's what I was envisioning with traffic calming, I guess.
Okay, thank you. Any additional questions for the applicant? Okay, I'm not seeing any, so let's move on with our agenda here. Sorry, I just have to pull up one more screen. So that was applicant's testimony, and now I would ask if there are any proponents. So any proponents who wish to speak on this? So again, I would ask you to raise your hand and we're going to monitor that if you would like to speak in favor of this application. Okay, I'm not seeing any hands raised. If we miss you, we'll, you know, if you raise your hand out of turn, we'll try to catch you. So next. Anyone neutral, anyone has questions or wants to make a statement that is neutral, go ahead and raise your hand. Okay, any opponents, anyone who would like to speak against the application, please go ahead and raise your hand. We have quite a bit of testimony on this already in writing, but does anyone wish to address us verbally? I see one hand. Let me just wait a minute. I see two hands. I see three hands. Okay, well, let's get started. And if someone wants to raise their hand as we go along, the order that I saw was I saw Mary King, then I saw, I think, Megan Barton, and then Al Barton. I might have gotten the two of you backwards, but you can fight that out. But we're going to call on Mary King first. And there's Mary's photo. So I see your mute is already off. Mary, go ahead and address us if you keep it brief, but we're not going to set a formal time limit.
I still have concerns about the drainage issue and about how we as down gradient neighbors would be assured if there were no conditions of approval or no stormwater tract or anything on the preliminary plat to protect us, so that worst case scenario, we don't end up like the houses down the road on Eugene, where they have a chronic problem with water seeping across the sidewalk and into the road. It's really dangerous in the winter. You know, I walk during the winter. That's still my primary mode of transportation. My husband bikes with studded tires on his mountain bike. And so this to us is really important. And we shovel snow off of our driveway along with Megan and Al, our neighbors. And if ice buildup becomes a concern, you know, that is really a significant issue for us. And I appreciate that the applicant has stated that the preliminary grading plan is conceptual only. And yet, as neighbors, I think that we have a right through the land use planning process to have a little bit more assurance than that. And I addressed in an email to you that I think that there were some zoning code issues, municipal code sections that haven't been adequately addressed. So I hope that as commissioners, you'll take our concerns seriously and not let this move forward to City Council until our concerns are taken into account in either the plat itself, preliminary plat itself, or at least in conditions of approval. And that's all I have to say on that issue at this time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I believe, Megan, I'm going to say that you are next. You can correct me if that's not correct, but let's turn your mic on. And there's
okay,
a photo of Megan. Thank you. Go ahead.
Oh, hopefully you can all hear me.
We can, very clearly.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, I've had some experience with Zoom. So hopefully you all received my information, a letter that I addressed to you, all my concerns. Obviously, I have the same concerns being neighborly with Mary. We have a different drainage situation in which we have obviously all that vegetation above, which does provide a buffer. Let me point that out. You know, my concern is that with paved areas, with more development, with increasing, obviously, R1 to R2, you know, will that drainage be taken, be more of a concern? We have a sump pump underneath our house that helps us deal with that runoff, and I echo Mary's concerns. Down the road to the east of us, to the east of us, there is a constant drainage that you are all welcome to go and see. It is a problem that is consistent and has not been addressed, obviously, by the developer. And so that would be my biggest concern. And hopefully with more stringent requirements, we would see that not be an issue. And I do point out that it is odd to me that we're discussing R1 to R2 zoning, so increasing potential issues there with housing that is not affordable. And then now we're going to R2, it could be townhomes, could be, you know, other things. So it does allow a lot more leniency, but potentially not more affordable housing. And then, the fact that we have such a good house concept, but no issue, none of the drainage is addressed. So that's my biggest concern, is that, you know, the housing seems to be in and of itself conceptualized, but not the drainage. That's going to be dealt with further on down the road with engineers, which seems like an unusual way to plan things. So that's one of my concerns. And then I also addressed too, obviously, you know, as somebody who bought housing in this particular neighborhood, we bought with the intention that if there were to be development to the south of us, that, you know, potentially it would continue in that same R1 zoning. And so now all of a sudden you're squashing a lot more housing into something that, you know, again, is not potentially affordable. I don't see a lot of upsides to that. And then there is no barrier buffer that you're talking about that is occurring to the south with, you know, alleyways or anything like that. So basically in that presentation, even though we were rest assured because Mike had addressed that, you know, it looks like it's just basically a retaining wall in my very backyard that I'm going to be looking at and looking up at someone else's home. So I just, you know, it would be nice right now. Obviously, I look at a field, I look at pheasants that come through there, coyotes, I look at all kinds of wildlife. And, you know, it'd be nice to be rest assured that the paths that people are enjoying to the west of us, that there is some kind of buffer of wildlife or, you know, places that people can enjoy that we have all enjoyed. But yeah, my biggest concern, number one, is drainage. So thanks for listening to my comments.
Megan, before you get off, let me just ask you a quick question.
Sure.
You mentioned that your situation is a little bit different than Mary's. We have your addresses, but I'm not sure what you're talking about when you're talking about the difference, because I don't know which house is which. So can you just give us a little picture of the neighborhood?
Sure. Yeah. So I am, let's see, second house west of 30th and on Eugene Street. So as far as the plat looks, I would be the homes would be built starting right in my very backyard, and then beyond that, I think there as the plat goes. And I'm sorry, I don't have the map up in front of me, which I can refer to, but both Mary and I, and then Shirley, who is our neighbor to the further west of us, who would have the basically the lakefront property with the pond potentially. I joke about it, but you know, just right. You know, the concern there is supposedly also on the plot, which is confusing on a couple different things. Looks like there's a swale that would occur in our backyard, but I can't be certain about that. So it's just, there's some confusing aspects to it. And it seems like that's a good place to start, is, you know, maybe having that all addressed before you change zoning or, you know, conceptualize.
Great. And so you're basically, you're three of the five houses on that block, on that side of I believe it's Eugene, that would back up onto this subdivision.
Yes. And in the concept,
in the order, it's your house, then Mary's house, then Shirley's house.
Yes, and directly to our east, there is a neighbor. I don't want to make assumptions, but I do believe that their primary language is not English. And so we've encouraged them to be part of the process, but I don't know that they necessarily would know how to access these things. So I've encouraged people in the neighborhood to comment and be part of the process. For sure. But I don't know that that is an easy part for them, but they are neighbors directly to our east. And then Mary and I, in the conceptualized sort of world of what our subdivision looks like, we share a shared driveway.
Great. Thank you very much. Yeah. That helped
you
quite
bet.
A bit.
Yeah.
Next we have Al Barden. So Jonathan, if you could turn his mic on.
Okay. Can you hear me?
We can. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, commissioners. Appreciate the opportunity to provide public input. And I do appreciate your diligence. I appreciate your strident questions. And also I do appreciate the developer, you know, having an opportunity to speak and address what appear to be the major concerns. So thanks for this opportunity. I would just concur with what my neighbor, Mary, and my wife just talked about. Our primary issue is stormwater. I think I can concur with both of their comments, so I don't need to belabor, other than I'm a little concerned about the process. It sounds like that this council is just like, well, the next group will figure that out and we'll trust that the developer will get that done. And I appreciate that the laws are more stringent. I guess I'm a little concerned that this group would just pass the buck to the city council. And then if, as I understood the process, and correct me if I'm incorrect, is that then an engineer would go forth and there would be no public comment. And we just trust that the engineer and the developer would work in the best interest of everybody. That just feels a little cart before the horse, and if this group has concerns about that they would address that, whereas this appears to be more procedural. So again, please correct me if I misunderstood. I tried to follow the conversation diligently, but my question would first just be about a process piece, that this group is, okay, they met the conditions, off it goes, and then, you know, maybe the city council and then we'll address that. But I guess I would ask that what your role is. I'm not really clear about that. I also just wondered too, and I won't belabor with reading my comments. I know they are part of the testimony. There were a number of other questions. Does staff answer those questions individually? I didn't hear my questions come up, or whether, again, I don't want to read, you know, verbatim and hold you all hostage reading my letter. But I had a number of other questions about issues that weren't talked about. I'm not sure in the matter of process whether, you know, that just gets filed and included with the paper and maybe the city council read it. Again, I'm not trying to be cynical. I just want to be clear about the process. You know, the focus as I heard it today was about water, a couple other questions about the wall, which really came quickly. So I didn't hear any real discussion about that other than, well, maybe it'll be, you know, 5 feet, maybe it won't be 5 feet. This is just a discussion. I guess I was a little confused too and would have appreciated more information about what the, and maybe that's me as an informed citizen, sorry, I talk really fast. As an informed citizen would be expected to understand things like zoning requirements and R2. Oh, it could be a duplex. It could be a, you know, single family. Again, my question in the, is really, I think we have an opportunity in Hood River. Why not more dense? You know, again, maybe I'm going against the wishes of my neighbors, but, you know, working with people with severe low income and serious mental illness, there's a huge shorting housage. And I did appreciate the comments of the developer, but why wouldn't we build more? And if we're going to change zoning, why wouldn't it go more intense? I just think that flies in the spirit of what we're not trying to do in Hood River. I'd be one of the probably few that says, yes, build more dense housing, make it affordable, make it, I mean, I don't know why we're changing it other than this is what, you know, a developer has proposed. Maybe that's outside the purview of this group. And then just my other questions, I had questions about environmental impact. Again, maybe I didn't read the material enough, so I just would defer to the staff follow up with me about my questions, or do they, am I supposed to raise them here and get an answer from you all? Does that go to the council? Maybe I should raise these questions there. I'm asking for a process clarification.
So yeah, so this is the time to raise them. You absolutely should raise them. We have your letter in front of us. It's in attachment D, and I'll just give the page number for everybody. It's page number 11 in attachment D, or is it E? Well, D and E are combined. So it's page 11 in whatever that combined attachment is. You know, we got it as a single PDF. So it's page 11 in that PDF. And I see you've asked 8 questions, and your concern is that the wildlife issues haven't been discussed. I also see you mentioned a maple tree. I believe we have heard addressed some of the other issues. So you should be clear on which things you want us to consider now. Okay. And let's make sure that we have that discussion.
Okay. So yeah, I'll just read backwards. Thanks, sir, Commissioner Babbitts. Again, and you can just direct me if, you know, look in the files, it was filed in there, but was there any environmental impact statement done to the land to the south? I would appreciate, in other words, what was the thinking? Again, maybe this is my naivete about city planning and how zoning works, but, you know, was this just a developer came and said to this owner, hey, we'd be happy to build your house. Was that got a different, why, in other words, why wasn't the zoning more intensive, or why was it not left at zoning one? Is that just a prerogative of the developer and the owner and that's their right? I guess I just was wondering about that process. Again, if this is a, you know, I hear you all trying to conform with a larger developmental piece of how the, you know, the city and the west side specifically is supposed to develop. I just wonder why, you know, where was that discussion? And maybe, again, that's my naivete that, hey, people come and say, hey, here's some land, we want to build it. We need to build it zone two to make it feasible. But I guess I just, where was that discussion? And if that discussion didn't happen, where would that happen? And you can direct me if it's a city council issue.
Yeah, so let's make sure that we get, so we now have your questions on the record, and the applicant and the city staff will have a chance to comment before we close the record on this. So we'll get to hear more about this. So I appreciate your bringing up these issues as you did. That's exactly what's supposed to happen now.
Okay, now I'll just be quick. Sure. What were the environmental factors considered in the wall? Again, I guess I'm just a little concerned that, well, we'll figure that out later. That just to me feels like passing the buck down to, you know, the council, and are we gonna have an opportunity to vet that? And, you know, we'll let the experts figure that piece out. And again, I'm not here to malign the developer. I do sincerely appreciate their efforts to try to, you know, make things right with neighbors. And I'm not trying to be a NIMBY, but I'd sure like to see specifically what that is versus, oh, we'll just figure that out later or somebody else will cover that. Yeah, the piece about the maple tree, just about how they make sure that there's not any damage to that such that it would become a problem. And then I think the last two are just combined together about, you know, what, how does that, again, I'm not an expert, but how do you figure out things like CFS and water flow? Because I concur with my neighbor, there's a lot of water that comes off there. There is some construction prior to when they moved in. How would that be impacted? You know, there was a water diversion project. And so I'd like to know, you know, did they get into the weeds and look at that? And then last but not least is, again, I think just the issue about the stormwater abatement and how that's going to get handled and whether that is something you all do or you're just looking at a narrow set of criteria and you're going to pass that along to the council.
Great. So we have all those
questions
out there.
Sorry, I talked very fast.
Yeah, no, we appreciate that, Al. Thank you so much. So now let me look and see if there are any other hands raised. I'll just call sort of broadly for, against, or neutral. Raise your hands if you would like to speak, if we haven't heard from you yet. Okay, I'm not seeing any other hands raised, so that means we will proceed. And so now we have the applicant's rebuttal, and that will be followed by staff recap. And sometimes those kind of blend together, but let's leave the applicant to speak first, and Dustin queued up to also speak and help answer some of these questions. So Mike, go ahead.
I might need a little recap on the questions I'm going to answer, but the one that I'll start with, the stormwater process, you know, as an applicant, we don't get to, you know, pick and choose how the process goes. This is how, yeah, I guess the city has set its standard based upon the state's requirements. You know, what we're looking at today is a little vague, and on our behalf, I almost want to say we apologize that we don't give them more, but it is a function of kind of the process that it is a little vague. But to answer your question, it's not just left to, oh, we'll figure it out. The conditions of approval is that it needs to meet the standard and be approved by Public Works and engineering. So it's not quite as vague as, oh, we'll just hope they build it right in everybody's case. The city and, you know, the standard and what the community has voted and pushed in for policy is held accountable throughout the whole process. So this is not just quite as the planning commissioners vote and say, yep, you're good to go, and hopefully we pass the buck. This is more, and I'll let the council kind of speak a little more about it than that, but this is more that, does this conform with the city's needs? Does this meet code? Is this something that can be justified for the city? And I think that's kind of the process we're looking at now. And so for us as a developer, the reason why you're getting a concept is because before we go into full detail plans that'll cost us, you know, 100 to 150K to develop the engineering, we want to make sure that this is something that we're going to be allowed to build before we spend that, you know, funds. If we knew that, yep, you could build 18 lots, yes, it was a shoe-in, yes, it's guaranteed, and this is what the city wants, I'd gladly hand you all of the engineering today. But that's just not a risk. That's something that we can take at this point until we get to the next step. So on our behalf, we apologize. It's a little vague, but we also don't want to dismiss that it's not something that we're concerned with, and it's not something that we'll take into account. And I don't know how to politely say it enough, but the standard in which stormwater is measured today, I can't tell you this because it's not for me to guarantee you, but the standard and what it's measured, I can almost guarantee that it will not create a problem for your property, if not fix some of the current solution or current problems you're having with your stormwater runoff and groundwater runoff. Because that's the other thing that we'll also have to take into account. It's not just sheet flow. We have to take into account groundwater. And that comes up in the engineering requirements, which is a part of the condition today that they will vote on, say, yep, approved with conditions. That condition is in this report that we need to meet those standards. So it's not, yep, it's approved, and then we just get this free rein to do whatever. We need to meet those conditions. Kind of moving into the second one, which is why did we go in for R2? You know, to do a rezone, it has to be within reasonable, you know, consideration. So we tried to conform to the current development, which your properties are on, are R2. So we tried to take that, and everything to the east is also R2. We tried to take that density. If there was a way in which we could do higher density, I promise you we would have tried. But like I said, this has been a year in the making of communicating with the city of what they are going to need and require. You know, the city doesn't tell us what we have to do, but the standards and what we have to, you know, kind of build and develop to kind of funnel us to what you see in front of you, which goes back to the city's need for connection into the new West Side concept plan. The streets and what we've, you know, designed are aligning with the city's future needs. So that kind of was something I spoke about earlier, but that also addresses why you see R2 and only 18 lots is because a part of our responsibility is to build, and a part of the city's responsibility is to kind of request and design for future connectivity, not putting in a cul-de-sac turnaround street that serves 32 lots and it helps out my personal development and a few small needs, but it doesn't help the future growth of the city. So that kind of answers your question, hopefully, about why we only did R2 and why we're only getting 18 lots. You know, to go on record, like I said, if I could put 32 in there, I gladly would. And if I could sell them for, you know, 310, I would gladly build 32 and sell them for 310 to people, you know, that live here, my employees, people that work for the city, probably the people that, you know, you see in your line of work and business. So, it's not something we're not trying to do. It's just a nature of this piece and the limitations it has. I know the maple tree came up,
and then some environmental issues. Was there environmental impact necessary to be looked at, and wildlife in general?
You know, it's one of those pieces. That's a hard one, is that kind of comes up. There isn't really any requirement, and Dustin could probably help me out a little here, but there's nothing really in this piece that, that created a wildlife study or impact. You know, there is vegetation, that's taken into account of how much we remove and what we have to, you know, replace with. You know, it is kind of a hard piece, right? Anytime you take a pretty field and you turn it into a subdivision, you know, we don't have a great answer, but we're sorry. You know, it's nothing we can really produce more than that. You know, it's the nature of, you know, we need to work on the housing crisis. And to do that, we need to develop some pieces that are designed for residential housing and turn those into residential housing. The maple tree, to move to that one, is, you know, it's nothing that's in the requirement now. As being a good neighbor and a good person and a good community member, you know, I think that's a discussion we can have as neighbors. I don't know if the council is going to take that in. You know, that's for them to decide. But I don't know if I don't know how that works in this phase, to take on a tree issue between neighbors. You know, between neighbors, we'll do everything we can, you know, to work within our power, you know, not to damage the tree. I don't know the exact location of the tree. If it's on your property, there's no reason we'll, you know, cross into your property and do any damage for that reason. Also, if it's on the property line or root line, you know, we'll take that in consideration and work with you as a good neighbor and just as a good person to try to, you know, not create any harmful damage, you know, into the future of what you have as vegetation. And then the wall was kind of another one that tied in there. You know, like any project, we don't want to create, it's hard for me at this phase, because we have so much to go with engineering, that my concept and my desires sometimes get taken from me at engineering, because we need to do something better for your stormwater improvement, your drainage below the surface. So it's hard for me to say, yeah, you won't see any wall, you have this great, beautiful backyard. And then I don't want to be someone who's hypocritical, and then all of a sudden you see some form of wall, because the requirement from the engineering to create a better, safer backyard for you with less water damage through groundwater or surface water created us to design some kind of wall through engineering to meet those standards. I think the big part is in the new future development, the backyards, we want them to look and function as neighborly and as beautiful as possible, just like when we develop something, we don't want to cause any obstructions to your backyard that are, you know, an eyesore for you to look at either. Our concept and our design, and then what we'll actually physically build at the end, you know, we'll take that into account. You know, we don't want to cause hardship for you, either physically or aesthetically. So I know hopefully that was all of them. They might've been jumbled a little bit there, but.
I think you covered it. Dustin, I'm sure, has kept a list, and he's going to also address some, because mostly they're procedural questions, which I think he's probably in a good position to respond to. And so why don't we have Dustin speak, and then we'll let you, if you have anything that you missed, you know, write it down in your hand or something. I don't know if you can see your hand in that dark car, but, you know, write it down, and we'll give you a chance to throw it in before we close the testimony. So Dustin, there you are. Oop, you reappeared. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. just from some of the staff and what I've heard, I want to provide a little opportunity to talk about process. Prior to coming to Planning Commission, the applicant is required to provide notice to the neighbors for a neighborhood meeting. Then they proceed with compiling the application and its technical materials for the land use procedure, in which we review that and make comments and recommendations to you as a decision body for subdivisions and as a recommending body for the rezoning aspect of this. This is also an opportunity for, you know, the neighbors to speak to you, and sometimes through us, by translator or just compendium, we send out notice and we solicit those requests. So this is their time to speak to you as a decision maker on a subdivision and appointed body for that. So this is their venue. And then as far as the applicant goes, it's the applicant's burden to prove up that these criteria that I listed out and went through at some length are met, and providing the evidence that's necessary to really carry that burden. That's upon them. So when we compile information and we post it on the internet and we provide it to you, the intent is to cover the technical aspects of the review. Starting kind of high to low on some of these questions, the zoning aspect and the rezoning criteria show up in 17.8. That is a criteria that are laid out for staff to evaluate and for you to evaluate some of the zoning requests regarding consistency with our comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan has been looked at. We had a great deal of discussion regarding the West Side development and the West Side concept plan that wasn't actually turned into the comp plan, but it was to be used to help educate some of the land use decisions. So really a lot of the guiding principles on the subdivision, or excuse me, on the requests come from the housing needs analysis. And one of the key strategies from the housing needs analysis was that we were called to not only look at housing by the numbers, but also think about, and the city was gonna adopt strategies to make a more efficient use of the limited real estate it has, and look at how could we promote a greater mix of housing type. We develop 8 out of 10 homes as single family dwellings, and with the limited amount of real estate we have left, how do you make the most of what limited real estate you do have? There's also a issue that comes with that about compatibility. Now, that's not really a clear and objective standard for housing, for needed housing development, but it does have to do with how do you start weaving these things together and how do you provide some consistency. You've heard in the past about spot zones, or what people believe are spot zones, and the lack of compatibility. The idea, and when we do analysis in here and we provide maps, that this R2 zone is already developed to the north, it's already developed to the east. We make the argument or the recommendation that in itself is one of the criteria on how we have a natural expansion of the city. And it's not just by the numbers and the zoning, it's also by the way of infrastructure and the capital improvements and the adequate public facilities that are needed to make communities grow and to build this community. And that's where some of the stormwater and drainage comes in the adequate public facilities. So when we get these applications, we end up having storm drainage facilities show up in these preliminary plats. And that's included in attachment A. You have a preliminary stormwater management plan, or stormwater management plan prepared by a professional engineer. I think it's about 35 pages long. That engineer submits that to look at the topo and the drainage. So this is not just a complete deferral of looking at this. Our engineers, professional engineers, civil engineers, look at that and evaluate those plans against the criteria that we have. They also evaluate them against some of the capital projects that the city has in order to make its stormwater system work. And in those, you end up under Exhibit E in this packet, you end up with a series and review from our engineers that talk about, you need to, you know, they say right in there, you need to do this project, you need to do this project, you need to do this project. Improvements on Montello, extensions of the right-of-way, calculations of volume. So they do evaluate that, but they don't evaluate it to its final form. The technical aspects are still need to be, and the final technical aspects still need to be sharpened. And not to speak in the developer's defense on this, but it is, we are in a discretionary point. So typically you do not evaluate the final improvements, the final technical details until you have subject matter experts do that. So I'm not a professional engineer by trade. This group are not professional engineers by trade. We use our subject matter experts to final out those things. However, it's not just left up to the technical folks. We need some assurance, and we have our own engineers provide education and evaluate these things on our behalf. And when they see things they agree with, such as a finding that this is a feasible plan, they record that to us. When there's things that they want to put benchmarks for or bookmarks in to make sure that this plan does not leave this body with this approval, we can end up with conditions of approval, which in this plan, you have a series of conditions that mention engineering, that mention stormwater, and those projects that the developer, once they leave this public domain, and this is the public realm, and they go deal with the subject matter experts, that they don't get to forget about. So that's where we kind of, that interplay is, this is not just a stormwater deferral, but we would come here, and we come here with professional recommendations from professional engineers that show up here. And I think that's an important aspect. But I also think it, for the sake of transparency, the neighbors, when I mentioned that, you know, they don't really have an opportunity to deal with the technical professionals afterwards, this is the venue for them to speak their concerns, and this is the venue for you to gather information. This is a fact-finding hearing, and it's also a public hearing. So the point is to hear some facts and hear the public. As far as the environmental analysis, we have a number of goals that talk about particular resources. We have an inventory of natural resources. They include goal 5, they include riparian corridors. This site doesn't, based on our inventories, have any specifically or unique protected goal, we call them goal 5 resources. So we don't require an environmental impact assessment, or there's no mitigation that's required on there. There's no special aquatic wetland features. We provide notice to the Department of State Lands to evaluate sensitive wetland and aquatic areas. Those would come back as areas that need to be protected. Those have not shown up. There's no sign from recording aquatic resources or unique species resources on that. So that's kind of the process. We send those out to our subject matter experts, and they provide us notice if there's any issue to that. So
Dustin, just if people want to check on that, if you look at the staff report, that's on page 5, 6, and 7 in the staff report.
And that's really kind of how stormwater works in the process. Our evaluation on the comp plan is also included from the various goals. And I touched on those before. But certainly the zoning aspect is, you know, I don't think there's any expectation that this just gets deferred to council. But the final matters are reviewed. You know, the preliminaries are reviewed by professionals. Their findings are included here for your review, and the conditions they find necessary to ensure that we have the adequate public facilities here, as well as the applicant's submission of what they turned in for their stormwater. And that will continue review until the point where we see surety bonds in place to make sure public improvements are completed until the point where this thing is really closed out if approved, if developed. So there's really a checkpoint from concept to completion. We have checkpoints periodically. And this is at the land use checkpoint, really, where we as the public, just really start looking at this at the highest level and see if it's even feasible or permissible to be done. But that's not the end of the checkpoints. Again, we keep our technical folks going, and the applicant is required to check in and prove at different levels that they've met the code and the engineering standards. So I hope that helps demystify some things or answer some your questions. I'm here for any of your questions. Again, if there's anything that council needs from staff, or excuse me, commission needs from staff.
Thank you, Dustin. I guess I can just sort of comment that I've been doing this for 15 years now, you know, in a similar role as a public member reviewing these things. And it is very confusing, the interplay between the land use process and then the engineering review process that happens. You know, so many things are put before public bodies that clearly the members, such as myself, don't have the expertise to provide any final review on. And I can certainly appreciate the confusion, because I'm often confused on exactly what we're being asked to do versus what is done at later stages in the process. I have two questions that I'd like to ask, and then, you know, I'll open it up for commission members to ask. These are just very technical. I think there are some typos, and I just want to make sure that they are typos. So Dustin, if you could refer to the staff report, page 7 of the staff report, and believe it or not, I'm going to be talking about goal 13 and goal 14, which I think have never come up in a hearing discussion before. But goal 13, you say that LUBA and the courts have never given any regulatory effect to this goal. The proposed annexation is neutral from an energy consumption standpoint. Then you have a comma, and there's nothing else. And I just want to make sure that that really is supposed to be a period, and if there wasn't something that we're missing.
Oh, that's supposed to be a period. That's not a comma. Okay. Goal 13 Great. Really has no regulatory teeth to it within our code. And the annexation or subdivision technically really is kind of a net neutral energy idea.
Got it. And then goal 14, which is urbanization. I think this is just another typo. You say urbanizable, you open the quotes, but you never end the quotes. So I think it's kind of obvious that urbanizable is where the quote ends, but if I'm misreading that, let me know.
Quotes need to be closed.
So it's urbanizable is the total of the quoted?
Yep.
Great. Okay. So commission members, do you have any questions for either staff or the applicant concerning what we've just heard? Mark, go ahead.
Yeah. So Dustin. The West Side concept plan thought about various changes of zoning in that area of the West Side, but there's been no let's say agreement or formal structure or plan, except some ideas. How do we know that this change of this particular site from R1 to R2 meets a desired change in that area of town?
So I'm going to provide a screen share for you and just look at this.
I mean, there's some ideas that came out of the West Side around transect plans, right? And a kind of move from R2 to the countryside. You know, how does this reinforce you know, those ideas or.
Right. Do you have access to the map now?
We have two people with their feet in.
Mr. Rogers. Hold on, let me try again.
You don't understand the concept of a computer desktop and folders. That's what we're seeing.
Hey, that was really important today when we lost internet access. Let me tell you, I'm constantly held accountable by IT, but when it came down to having no internet, had my day. Hold on one second.
Share the other screen. So, you know, we had the idea of the transect, you know, neighborhoods and a plan for that area of town. So I'm just sort of curious how we know this.
And now we're seeing.
Yep. R2s and Mace. Yep.
We're on page 9 of 63.
So when we got to the intent and some of the West Side was to really better articulate some of the housing needs analysis and to make more efficient use of the real estate without getting, you know, we never got to the colors on the map and that kind of land use mix. So we decided to use, and it was accepted to just not have that as the approval standard, but use it as education and to really advance some ideas and concepts. So when we look at it now, that's where I use the first one, the neighborhood plan. The neighborhood concept should be used to some extent to educate this. We never adopted the land use plan and the colors on the map. So that really is not really something that pushed where we were going to decide to rezone and not. It wasn't accepted. So that's where I took that neighborhood concept map and left it on here. And then we use the housing needs analysis and some of the goal 10 inventory and start talking about efficiency of land use, using efficiently the last of your buildable real estate. And on this, you know, using some of the really rudimentary concepts of R2, the natural expansion of R2 when things are built on two side is there. And that's where we, you know, we kind of make that basis. This effort does make, in my findings, is a greater efficient use of the land. It provides a greater opportunity to mix in housing types, anywhere from single family to two family homes at this point, and or townhomes, two attached townhomes. And that is also a greater efficiency of the land use. So in those respects, it doesn't delve into the nuances that some of the West Side concepts we're looking at, but it doesn't fly in their face. And again, I think really using that neighborhood plan is probably one of the most important because it consolidates a lot of the overlay for the park, the open space, the trails, those key features such as the school and the future location. That's why I picked that one because I think it best represents some of the greater idea of what was happening there. And this being that future piece of development that, again, it's meeting an increased efficiency need without necessarily disregarding the compatibility of the surrounding land uses that are there now.
Talking of compatibility and switching then from the zoning question to the site plan review question, is there a case to be made that the lots 1 through 6 that back up to the single family homes are in some way restricted to be single family homes in lots 1 through 6 where the, I'll call it the center section is duplexes and townhomes?
I mean, it's R2, it's R2. I mean, it doesn't, that has not been proposed. I don't think we were necessarily looking to take it down there and to provide some sort of housing buffer, nor making the statement that duplexes and townhomes are incompatible with single family homes, especially when they're held to the same height standard. You know, they're the same height standard. R2 is relatively the same. They have the same coverage standard. So essentially whether two people live there or not, they have very similar design standards in place.
Okay, thanks.
Justin, remind me, if it were left R1, hasn't it been changed now so duplexes are allowed in R1?
Not in town. House Bill 2001 is in play on the state level. For medium-sized cities, the state has stated that that R1 has to require duplexes. The only difference would be they would be a duplex on a 7,000 square foot lot, not a 5,000 square foot lot.
But you're saying that isn't in effect?
That's not effect on the local level right now. You do have scenarios where you have two families. You know, now you have a ADU permissibility. So if it was R1, technically you could end up with two dwelling units. Just one of them is only 800 square feet. So
that was going to be my next question. So if it were R1, you could still see a single family home and an 800 square foot ADU.
Right. So the difference, that's really that you do end up with two dwellings on there. Again, one is just restricted to 800 square feet.
Okay. Mark, did you finish your questions? Anyone else have questions for staff or for the applicant while we have them? Okay, I'm not seeing anybody. Mike, this is kind of going to be your last chance. Did anything pop into your head that you wish to say before we close the record?
Yeah, maybe one thing really quickly. And I can't give the neighbors or those opposed any more reassurance than kind of what Dustin already did say. But kind of going through the process as it sits now with how we do subdivisions is the vote today, if it's to accept or not to accept, there are conditions of approval that are in this finding that require us, and that when you vote yes, that will hold us accountable to address the concerns that all of these have brought up, maybe minus, like I said, the maple tree, and then the exact height of the wall, things like that probably aren't exactly addressed, but the stormwater drainage, you know, runoff during construction, noise during construction. That was something I think we missed over, was noise and hours of construction, you know, in a residential area. All those are conditions of approval that the engineering department has placed on this. So if there is a vote today, those are already in place in the staff report that need to be addressed. So, you know, if it does get voted, I just want the neighbors to feel that there is some accountability to us as the developer, that they're just not getting passed over. And the engineering department and the staff has already taken those into account, and they're not being dismissed. So I don't know if that's a help to them or not, but it is kind of just something that we see as a developer that we're already held to because they are conditions of approval. So that'd probably be it.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mike. And Dustin, do you have anything else to add before I close the record?
We have no additional responses, but for deliberation, we'll be here supporting if you have questions that come up during deliberation. If there's any other questions that you need answered from us, we'd be happy to try to dig into the packet and or the code for you.
Okay. In that case, we have gone through everything in our agenda up to deliberation, so I need to close the hearing. We have not had a request to leave the record open or for continuance, so given that, I am going to close the record on this matter. We're closing the public hearing, and the commission can now deliberate. I just want to thank everyone for their participation. This is really a great discussion. It's very helpful to help frame the thing. So we're in deliberation now, and what I'm going to suggest to the commission is that we start by discussing the zone change, because the subdivision is irrelevant if the zone change doesn't happen, presuming that we were going to include the condition in there, which I'm going to guess is something we all agree on. So let's talk about the zone change. Are there any comments? Who wants to discuss the zone change? Tina, are you leaning forward to speak, or are you just leaning forward? No, she's just adjusting her her monitors.
I'll just add a comment, which is that I think it makes sense to put a zone 2 in that location just based on everything around it. So I don't have any problem with that. And I understand that the criteria is if it wasn't a mistaken zoning originally, and if it meets you know, some of the comprehensive plan requirements, such as improved housing availability, it's a good move to make.
Yeah, I would certainly, we have a situation where we're talking about the neighbors who are commenting are in R2 property, which backs onto this. There's R2 property all around it, or at least on the north and on the east. So it certainly doesn't seem surprising that you would consider a zone change here to allow greater development. I guess the comment that I would add is that I appreciate the neighbor's comment that adding the density doesn't make something affordable. I think that Mike addressed it pretty well by pointing out that he completely agrees, and he was very candid in giving a price point that makes it clear that we're not talking about affordable housing. We're probably not even talking about attainable housing, but we are talking about housing inventory. And one thing that we learned in all the the housing needs analysis, the buildable lands inventory, was that there's a fundamental issue that we have a lack of inventory at all ranges in of housing and addressing this, you know, providing single family homes, townhomes, duplexes in an R2 neighborhood on, you know, 5,000 square foot lots. Yeah, they're not going to be cheap, but we need that inventory also. So I find that to be consistent with the analysis that was done in the discussion of the West Side Area Concept Plan, as well as I find it consistent with the comprehensive plan. So I'm not seeing a lot of discussion there. Am I to take from that that we're all in agreement on this or not? So I can see all five of you. So yeah, go ahead, Tina.
I'll just throw in my two cents, just for the public giving testimony. I guess I just want to assure them that this hasn't really just come out of left field where we're just deciding willy-nilly to rezone this. They asked about where this was discussed. There was, as Dustin mentioned, at least a year of discussion about the West Side Plan and how, you know, all this private property is going to be developed and how it could be developed. And we talked about the connectivity, so these streets would fit together. We wouldn't have a lot of dead end, you know, neighborhoods. We would have hopefully connections to bike paths and things going through. So I guess I just want to assure them that this has been thought through pretty darn carefully. And I think if this gets approved, it really is very much in keeping with the surrounding neighborhoods. And I think it makes perfect sense. I mean, I'll echo what Sue said. I mean, it's surrounded by R2 for the most part. And I think, you know, if there's any discussion we want to continue with, it's do we want to talk about any ways to make sure some of it is duplexes or townhouses or ways to increase density? Is that in our purview or is that outside the realm of this discussion tonight?
So I'll jump in on that, Tina. I believe when we create a zone, so first of all, we won't create the zone. We'll make a recommendation. So City Council mm-hmm. would make a map change to create the zone. When they make R2, R2 is R2. In the past, there have been on rare occasions situations where zone changes were made, but with little codicils. To say, yeah, this is, well, the good example is down on Port Way. Yes, this is C2, but it can't really be used for all commercial uses. And that's proven to be a really bad idea. So if we're making this if we're making this R2, we should expect that Mike may or may not be the developer. We can't know what the future holds. So despite all best intentions, Mike is currently on the hook as a developer. He may not be there to develop this. He may develop this and then 10 years later, 20 years later, 30 years later, someone knocks the house down and redevelops it. So that's what we're looking at, changing the zoning map for until it's changed again, basically for the foreseeable future, to match an element of our code that says this is what you can do in R2. And what you can do in R2 may change, the map changes, but it all goes through this public deliberations and process controlled by the City Council. So I guess I'd be against any specific requirements beyond saying that we recommend an R2 zone.
Okay.
Not that it's impossible.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, this is Mark. I mean, I find this, it is consistent with the studies. It looks like it's developable land that would provide us an easy building site, basically, for, when there's no wetland through it, there's no rivers through it. I mean, notwithstanding the water drainage issues, but I think it's consistent with what we've said is buildable, good buildable land. So I yep. have no issues with the R2.
There's certainly a moderate slope on it, and there is a fair amount of drainage that originates
right.
in some of the R1 property just uphill. Megan, I think you're the only one who hasn't commented.
Yes, just really quickly, I liked Al's question on why it wasn't going to be more dense, and I liked Mike's candidacy about if he could do 30 units at 310, he would, because wow, that would be needed. But it is helping us. If more people that can afford the $550,000 home have inventory to buy those, they won't go after the, sorry, my cat is talking to me. They We've won't go after the houses that are less than $450,000 just to tear them down to put up a new, nicer home. So I'm in support of it too.
Thanks. It's certainly an interesting discussion. There are two ways that the rezones happen. They happen piecemeal like this, where a developer comes along and says, I'd like to rezone. And then they happen in a broader, more planned matter, which is what started with the West Side area concept plan discussion. But we still haven't gotten to the point of discussing whether there are any broad map changes that are to be recommended on that. And you know, it looks like that discussion is still down the road. But that's kind of where the discussion would happen about, okay, where can we put some R3 in here? But it always comes down to, is there a willing developer who's willing to move forward and a willing landowner who's willing to move forward? In this case, we have a request before us, and you know, the request is what the request is. So I'm not seeing any reason. It looks like we're all in favor of the rezone. So that we're going to have a motion. I think we're going to do a single motion at the end because it's all kind of in one set of findings. So it doesn't look like it's worth voting on this right now. So let's move forward into discussion of the subdivision. What are the issues we want to talk about in the subdivision? Certainly drainage has come up. Any other issues? Drainage environment. What other issues do we want to have on the list to have a quick discussion of? Okay, well, let's talk about drainage. I'm not seeing anyone jumping up and down. Like I said before, I completely appreciate why a neighbor would be very skeptical of a process, especially because, I mean, I personally know of specific examples where the process that was in place failed the residents. So I guess my view of this is, it is the process. We have no way of working outside of the process. If I were a neighbor who saw this happening, it's frustrating that the public input is at a stage before the development happens, and then before the engineering work is finalized. But it's kind of this funny dance, because you know, it wouldn't make sense to have us do the engineering, but at the same time, you need to get the public input into it. So that's kind of our role, to get the public input into it. But then you go into this process where it's kind of in the hand of the professionals, the professional administrators and professional engineers. And you know, people rightfully ask, like, well, when do I get to comment on it? Well, you get to request documents. Do you get to comment on it? According to Dustin, you don't. If I were a neighbor, I would be requesting the documents. And if I saw something I didn't like, I would have a lawyer involved, and I would be coming forward and saying, this is not acceptable to me, because that's the process that we have. There's not another checkpoint that involves going in there and saying, okay, does the public agree that the engineers got this right? If you see something that doesn't look right, you bring your own engineer in, and then you go in with the lawyer and say, the city's not doing its due diligence, the city's not doing its job, and I'm going to we take issue with this. I don't see another process. So I believe that the feasibility, or the plausibility, I think was the term that was used, plausibility of managing the stormwater, managing the flow of water across this subdivision, should the subdivision be approved, is there, and that's all that we as average citizens can do. And then as this goes through the process of someone actually deciding what they want to build and getting a building permit for it, boy, I would you know, I would definitely suggest you watch every step of the way. And you know, if you need to bring your own engineer in, bring your own engineer in and challenge it. But I don't see how we as the planning commission could stop this based on the stormwater, given what we've seen.
Yeah, I guess that was my questions originally were, I guess I'm just a little troubled by the transparency of it, and not to imply that there's anything underhanded going on or that the engineers aren't completely capable, but I just feel for the neighbors that they have to sort of go in and request documents and go through some formalized process, that it would be nice if they were just easily available so they could sort of just at least keep track of what was going on and maybe, you know, see if there was something that bothered them. And again, I think this is out of our realm, so maybe this isn't the right place for this discussion, but I guess I don't know. I would like to throw that out there to say that this whole sort of formal process of requesting documentation, I mean, how's the average neighbor even gonna know how to do that or where to do that or when to do that? It seems a little too veiled to me.
So yeah, everyone in Hood River is downhill, downwater from somebody.
Yeah.
And this isn't a new question, it's not a new process. I think, you know, staff and Mike Kettler are correct in saying that it's a lot better than it used to be. So, you know, therefore maybe a little more trust is due, but as a neighbor, I would be skeptical. And I would, we know Mike's a good developer. We've seen the work he's done. So can certainly be, you know, trusting there. But again, we don't know who the developer's actually going to be on this. And as a neighbor, I would be watching it like a hawk. Anyone else wish to comment on stormwater discussion?
Well, I just have a question on that. Is that something we can add to the conditions of approval, that the neighbors be notified when the engineer plans are done? Or
good question. Let's ask staff. Dustin, you're still there, right? Can you answer whether we could add a condition of approval requiring that documents being conveyed to neighbors?
Yeah, you could add that condition. I would probably ask that of the applicant and then kind of put that in the manner in which it was provided. Just by way of, are they notified after they're approved? Just to be real specific, because we would want a real milestone.
I'm sorry, I'm not following. What are you saying?
Oh, just being real specific of when they are approved, prior to approval. Again, this is the engineering folks are not ready. Our engineers are not necessarily ready. So who's going to be responsible for this? The applicant, like noting the applicant will notify the neighbors within 250 feet upon approval. I mean, it's just important to, if you're going to place a condition to let the applicant know, and then very deliberate.
Yeah. What if we said that when the final stormwater management plan was completed, that neighbors could be notified
by the applicant?
Dustin, why don't you make a proposal? Advise us.
I don't know what
within reason.
I would say so. That's where I was like kind of giving you the sidebars, and I would look also to the applicant to say, do they agree to this, because it's outside the purview of the clear and objective standards. So if the council or if a planning commission wanted an additional condition of approval, that upon approval of the final stormwater management plan, the applicant provided notice to adjacent neighbors along Eugene Street between 30th and future 29th, however, the immediate block or the southernmost block of Fox Hollow, that could be included as a condition of approval.
Okay.
And does it have to be, I don't know what providing notice, what legal implications are to that. I mean, could it be something as simple as an email that it is available on such and such a website or something? Or I don't know.
I would provide written notice to an address of the property owner, because I don't have everyone's emails, and I would not recommend relying on email as the formal way. I have address.
Okay.
Address. Everyone.
Good old fashioned U.S. mail.
Okay. Tina and Sue have both sort of pursued that line of suggestion. Do you want to craft that or make a proposal to that effect? How do you want to deal with this?
Well, I'm curious what other people think. I mean, I'm kind of throwing this out because I know, as we said, if I were a neighbor, I would be wanting a little more transparency in the process. Do other people think that makes sense?
I think that makes sense. I mean, I think that whole Fox Hollow all the way over to Rand, I've seen the water coming down the street. So I'm happy to hear what Mike had been talking about in terms of increased standards. So let's hope that it's designed that way. So I think that's a good call.
Yeah, and I guess I just want to, again, reiterate that this is no reflection whatsoever on what we think Mike is proposing. It's just understanding that the neighbors, you know, have some concerns and just want to be kept informed with what's going on uphill.
We don't know it's Mike doing it.
Well, good point.
Right. We always have to remember that best intentions, you know, this is an entitlement which lasts, 2 years, I believe. So we don't know who's actually going to be carrying this out. So it's worth being skeptical. It's worth making sure all the T's are crossed and I's dotted. So I'm certainly in favor of that. Megan, are you?
Yep. I commiserate with the frustration as well. There's so many times where we're hearing about these plans and I want to see like nitty gritty, like cross section details of what the street's going to actually look like. And the reply is that engineering will take care of it. And so it's the same thing for stormwater.
So it sounds like from what staff recommended to us, if we are intending to put this as a condition, we would be on shaky legal ground if we did this without the agreement by the applicant that they're willing to accept this. So we still have the applicant here, and with your approval, I would ask that we put the applicant on. I think the applicant's attorney is here also. So the question is, are you okay with me putting the applicant into this discussion just for a moment to ask if they are amenable to this proposal? And why don't you restate the proposal? I'm sorry, I forgot if it was Tina or Sue who stated it, but could you restate it? I saw Sue writing some notes, so it looks like you were getting ready to do it as a motion.
Well, I think we want to add a condition that it would be conditional for the applicant to apply to supply written notice to all neighbors within that 250-foot radius at the date of the final approved stormwater plan.
Okay. Tina, is that along the lines of what you were thinking?
Yeah, I think so. The final stormwater management plan, neighbors would be notified when that is completed and available.
Well, I would think the order of events would be that their engineers, the applicant's engineers, would design the engineering drawings and then submit that to the city. So I would think the neighbors would want to see it before it goes to the city, or you're suggesting the city would then look at it, approve it, and then if the neighbors got it at that point, it's already been approved. You wouldn't want to go back and have it reapproved, but maybe the applicant can decide.
So what's your proposal, Sue or Tina? I'll let you guys field this.
I don't know your workings of this happen, how this gets, how a stormwater management plan gets approved, so.
Well, what happens is,
I think Mark is speaking to the complexity of how detailed we have to make this, but really the objective is that we are pushing information out to the public that says, hey, if you want to react, you should know this, as opposed to forcing them to just keep checking in and trying to pull the information out. So I want to make sure information gets sent out. So the specific timing, from my perspective, should be after it's all finalized and approved. Because the only response they can make at that time is to get their own engineers and or lawyers involved to challenge it.
I guess I thought you were gonna head in exactly the opposite direction, Sue. the way I'm thinking about it is, we don't know, it could be any time between now and 2 years from now. that you know, Mike finally gets this stuff together and has a stormwater plan, which he's submitting to the city for approval. And basically what I think, you know, I would like to see happen is some wake up that happens that says to the neighbors, hey, guess what? This has come through now. They're going to start the discussion mm-hmm. of it. So it's worth it for you to start paying attention. If you want to hire a lawyer, if you want to hire an engineer, this is the time that you would do it. And give them a little heads up on it that something's been submitted to the city. So I would say, I would suggest that it makes most sense. If I were a neighbor, I would be happiest to be notified that a proposal has been made. And at that point, I'm then responsible for tracking it myself and for asking the questions and deciding what I want to do. But whether or not it's been approved, I'm going to start asking questions. I'm going to keep asking questions until it's done. So what do you guys think? Which you like better, Sue?
I don't know. I'm thinking neighbors could proactively get in, you know, they could hire their own engineer and just evaluate what the standards that are out there. Does another second opinion, engineering opinion, confirm that those standards are sufficient? I mean, maybe that's the route they should take. I still think it's worthwhile for us to say, hey, these final stormwater management plans are out there, and if you want to look at them, this is the date that they were completed and approved.
So it's a transparency, which I think Tina brought up and you brought up, and you think that that's a reasonable transparency to that there's a notification and that you believe they will have been watching all along, and that at that point, that's the point at which they know that, you know, this is, if you're going to bring suit, this is when you have to do it. Okay. So yeah. Other folks, we're going to have to decide. So before we ask the applicant about this, which way are we leaning?
Mark, I would Megan, put down completion and submitted to the city. When plans are complete and submitted to the city. And then maybe there's like a, you know.
That's what I agree with that. Yep.
Okay. And that's what I think that's what you said, Sue, isn't it?
Okay.
And Sue, is that what you said?
It's not, but that's fine. I'm good with that. Submitted to the city, not final approval. But...
Oh, I'm sorry. No, you're right. Yeah, that's what I said. Okay. Yeah. I sometimes forget which side of an argument I took. Megan, are you okay with that? Okay. So really, I see we have Mike's face there. I keep on wanting to call you Ben. Sorry about that, Mike. I know Mike's brother, Ben. Mike, is that something that you would voluntarily consider acceptable?
I think our answer is, I mean, unless our attorney jumps on really quickly and tells me to be quiet, I would say yes. The only thing I would, almost on behalf of the landowners or the neighboring properties to be kind of careful with, is this is a multi-submittal. In the engineering process, it's not as simple as we submit one pretty packet, the engineering department just says, yep, check. It's a lengthy, expensive, detailed process. So, Sue made a good point of this is a transparency question, not really like a checking in, you know, with their professional experience. If they hired an attorney and an engineer every time the submittal discussion happened with the engineering department, they will rack up a pretty expensive bill. And I'm not trying to discourage them from doing it. I'm just more saying when we submit, right, whether it's approved or not approved, when we submit, there's conditions that come back and back and forth and back and forth. And it's a pretty extensive dialogue in the way the process works. So I think on our behalf, I would say, yeah, we will give them notice that we submitted. I mean, that's very easy because one, it's already there. They can already go on and look at these, their public records. So it's not like we're hiding anything. All we're doing is giving them one more kind of level of transparency to say, yep, hey, just, you know, kind of waking you up where we are in the process, because we'll go from here and it'll go quiet and then we'll submit something, because it takes months for the engineer to go through the process. So I think on our end, dealing with, you know, the transparency and unveiling, yes, we would, you know, take a condition like that. I would just be careful to make sure that it has something to the public, knowing that just because we submit, that's not the document they want to go take off and run to their engineer and run to their attorney and put a bunch of money and time into, because by the time they're done, we could have submitted a new document that the engineering from the Hood River requires. And so it changes. So now they got to go back and have their attorney and their engineer look at a new document, which could build some expense for them. So I think
Your attorney has his hand raised. So before you sum it up, you might want to let your attorney speak.
Thanks. I can't see that. So thank you for telling me that. Yeah.
John, would you promote Doug Powery?
Okay, we see Doug. Are you muted still? Yeah, Doug, you're still muted. You need to unmute yourself.
Okay.
Okay, Doug is unmuted. Go ahead, Doug. Yes, you can. Thank you.
Good. Well, you know, frankly, I think this is a fool's errand here, because what we're really doing is, I mean, I understand the neighbors' concerns, but they really aren't concerns that can be dealt with by the neighbor saying, well, I just don't know whether that plan is good enough. It definitely has to come from an expert, and those experts are already available at the city. And so if we get into this battle of engineers saying, well, your stormwater plan isn't good enough, even though the city has accepted it, I think we have a problem. It's exponentially increasing the cost to the developer and the neighbors, for that matter. So I would think that a condition of that sort is unwarranted, unless you don't have confidence in your own city staff.
Thank you, Doug. So Mike, as the representing the applicant.
I do agree with Doug that it is kind of setting a slippery slope precedent to basically you're creating a condition to question your own staff. From that stint, I wouldn't deny or even appeal the condition. I think my two cents is Doug brings up a really good point. That's a dangerous slope for you to basically build a condition to question your staff. As far as putting a condition in that has transparency, I would say, you know, yes, but also once again, the transparency is there. This is all public record. If the condition is a reminder that just says, hey, this is where the subdivision is, if that's a condition that this subdivision requires extra transparency in an additional letter at applicant submittal, and that's it. That's something that I think we would take on for the transparency factor. I think, in my opinion, it should be pretty limited to what that is, and it's more just a notice of we've submitted, and there's the notice, so they can, you know, get a calendar reminder in their Google Sheet that lets them know.
Mike, thank you very much. I think we've heard enough on this to finish our deliberation. So, Jonathan, if you could restore us to the deliberation mode. Somehow Sean is still here. Sean, what are you doing there? Okay, it looks like we're back to deliberation mode here. So what I see is we don't have a wholehearted endorsement of this. I tend to think, I think Tina got it right talking about this is kind of, is it unusual? No. I guess I disagree with Doug's appraisal that this is a sign of lack of trust. This is simply letting people know where we are in the process. And I don't see that as problematic to add a requirement that the developer let people know that they've reached a certain point in the process, so that those people, if they want to, they can, you know, hire a lawyer and start suing. I mean, that I understand why a developer wouldn't want that, but that's kind of how the world works. So I don't see a problem with adding it as a condition. The applicant can appeal it if they don't think that that's a reasonable condition.
Well, and I guess I also don't know that we should automatically jump to the presumption that people are going to get this information and immediately want to sue somebody. I mean, I think as a homeowner, you just want to be aware of what's happening and you want to understand the process. And it's, I don't think it's asking too much to say, hey, this has been filed. And, you know, if you want to read about it and you want to keep track of what's going on, here's how to find the documents. That's all we're simply saying. We're not at all implying that anyone's going to sue anyone.
So I haven't changed my mind. I don't know if anyone else has. Sue, well, Mark?
Yeah, actually, I think I may have changed my mind, even though I initially brought it up. But I kind of thought Doug made a good point, but also Mike, when he was talking about submittal, can happen multiple times. So letting someone know that something's been submitted, I'm not sure that's even useful information to some degree. So this whole process of the public hearing tonight has told everyone that seems to be interested in it, the fact that these are public records, they do have every right to go solicit them on their own, and they can do that at any point in time. And that might be as much information as we need to provide. So I'm kind of changing my mind.
The public doesn't know whether to go look for that information in 3 months, 9 months, 3 years, right? So.
Right, but they also, so if we want to make the condition that it's after final approval of the stormwater as opposed to submittal, maybe that's
whether it's before the permit was, or the submittal happens, or after the final was approved. The point is what are they going to look at the website every week for the next 3 years?
I think every 3 months. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Some notification would be nice, I think, but not.
It's given the degree of neighborhood concern. I don't think it's unreasonable to do something that says that there should be some notification that things have started moving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess I would say on the initial submittal, I'd be fine with a notification then. And it's like, okay, now things are starting to move ahead. You guys may have been, you know, you may be off doing other things. You've gone back to your lives and now this is starting up again. So, you know, start listening.
Yeah, put in a public records request.
I think, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I think you have a Sean Wagner hand up that would be appropriate for procedural matters only.
I'm sorry, I did not see that. So that's the situation now. We are in deliberation, so we're not requesting any additional information, but we will promote Sean Wagner with the warning that we're only looking for procedural questions. So if you would like to challenge the procedure, let us know. And there's Sean, and you can unmute yourself. And go ahead, Sean, is this a procedural question?
I guess it's probably not.
Okay. In that case, we thank you for your candor, and we're going to mute you now. Thank you, Dustin. Thanks for letting us know. The point that was made that there were multiple submittals, I get that, and that's why I think I would be careful to say initial submittal. If you have the word initial in there, then it's making it just one notice they have to send out. It doesn't seem like an owner's burden. It doesn't, you know, we're not saying that we don't trust anybody and they're not, you know, and the neighbors can choose to ignore it or whatever they want, but at least they've been notified that, that this is now starting to move forward.
Okay.
Yep.
You don't have to agree, Sue. You can.
I mean, originally, that's what I wanted to do. I mean, I can see that. That's fine. That's good.
Because you almost had me convinced, Sue. I'm certainly not a strong opinion on my part, but definitely. This is going to come up more. You know, if we do something like this, people will ask, and other people will ask this in the future. In my mind, what makes this unusual is that there are known and existing stormwater issues and that we've had a lot of comments on it. So it's worth being providing some amount of additional transparency. But yeah.
I agree.
It's not obligated.
No.
Okay, so it looks like we're getting head nods on that, and the wording would be on initial submittal of the of a stormwater plan to city engineering. Other issues, wildlife, environmental issues, environmental impact, that sort of thing. Any comments on that?
I don't know what we really can do about this, but I'm very sympathetic to this issue because as we develop these almost virgin lands to the west, the wildlife are gonna get pushed out. And we don't even have a mechanism for like wildlife linkages or corridors.
Well, there is, I'm sorry, under city code and under state law, there's the Goal 5 resource delineation. And that's the process where you're supposed to address issues like that. You're supposed to identify resources, environmental resources that are to be protected. And so our city has gone through that process and has a very minimal set of things that have been put on that list. And so this issue came up in the Morrison Park discussion that, you know, Morrison Park is a grove of old growth trees that needs to be protected. It's like, well, okay, it's not on the list of things that are intended to be protected. So from the point of view of as a planning commission, I don't think that we have much we can do at this point. If I wanted to create a wildlife reserve on the west side of town, I would say city council would need to do that, and they would do it by making it a delineated, you know, a recognized Goal 5 resource. But then, you know, I look at what Oregon land use is about. We're supposed to be doing development within the urban growth boundary. If we're going to make the wildlife refuge within the city limits, then we're putting pressure for development outside of the city limits.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. Concerns about that. I'd much rather leave the wildlife up in Post Canyon or outside of the city than I would say, let's not do development within the city because we're protecting this.
Yeah, no, totally. I just want the wildlife to be able to travel through these neighborhoods without... and I don't even think we have anything in our, we've never encountered this discussion before, so.
No, I mean, I've been in this discussion many times.
Okay.
Jürgen Hess and I have talked about the you know, having sufficient, you know, tree crowns for birds to move through, you know, ground squirrel, enough ground squirrels, gray squirrels. There's all sorts of different things. At the end of the day, I'm not sure that the Planning Commission is the place that you talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think this is within our realm for this subdivision discussion. We're also talking a pretty small area, but I do think it's something we need to tuck away for when Henderson Creek comes back and we talk about the TSP and you know, the potential for a riparian corridor along right. some of pathways, and that's, you know, that's very close by.
Yeah,
you know, it's tough too, because every street that gets developed, you know, the quail have to move, and it is, it's, you know, it's kind of the reality of all of us wanting to live in homes.
Yeah, and my recollection is that in terms of identified Goal 5 resources, we're very limited. We have, I think, Phelps Creek, and the Hood River, I think, and the Columbia River are the identified riparian zones.
Indian Creek as well, right?
I'm not sure it is. That's why I didn't say it, because I don't think it is. Okay. It may be, but you know, in any case, it's pretty limited list. So certainly Henderson Creek is not on that list. And yeah. It is something that, you know, this list was prepared a long time ago, probably in the 1980s. I think sensibilities have changed a bit. So it's certainly something that could be brought back to the city council to work on, but it's not the planning commission's job.
It's
not in the context of a subdivision that we would do it. But no, I don't discourage you from talking about it. It's just, this is not, you know, we have an application before us. We can't consider this because it's not on our goal five list. They're complying with federal laws. They're complying with state laws, and then the city code that is relevant here. If it's not on the goal five list, we don't consider it. I don't, you know, what else to do.
Yep, I agree.
So is there anything else we need to discuss? You know, Maple Tree came up and that, you know, is characterized as a neighbor-to-neighbor thing. And I think, you know, that's my understanding is that the city regulates street trees. It doesn't regulate individual trees. And there are certainly issues where neighbors have trees that impinge on other neighbors. And there's always issues that come up with that. I don't think that there's anything that could be put into a subdivision as a condition that could help with that. I've never seen anything like that. I just got finished having a tree worked on. My neighbor came to me and asked if I was interested in doing it. I just finished spending $1,200 on tree work in cooperation with my neighbor because we both agreed on what to do with this. So so I know that's going to happen. And I have a bill sitting in front of me right now to deal with it. But other than that, I don't think we can put it in a subdivision request. So if there are no other issues to discuss, I would suggest that someone make a motion.
I'll make a motion that we approve. I'll make a motion that we approve file number, I wrote down 2020-13. Is that correct?
I believe it is, but
that is correct. That's the correct number.
Thank you, Dr.
I'll make a motion that we approve file number 2020-13 with the conditions of approval as stated and one additional condition of approval that neighbors within 250 feet are notified when the initial stormwater management plan is submitted to the city.
Okay. And to be clear, implicit in this is our recommendation on the zoning change, and then that's made whole by the contingency in one of the conditions upon the zone change. So yeah, you don't have to change your motion. I'm just making sure everyone understands that we'll be having a single vote, which should resolve both of these issues. So everyone here heard that? Do we have a second?
Yeah, I'll second it.
Okay, so I have a motion by Tina, a second by Sue, to approve 2020-13 with the additional condition concerning notification of the 250-foot notification upon initial submittal of the stormwater plan. So any further discussion? Okay, if there's no further discussion, I would simply ask for a vote. Those in favor, let's do the thumbs up since we can see that in Zoom. So those in favor, thumbs up. Okay, chair votes yes. I see unanimous support for this, so I'm going to call this as motion is approved. And with that, this hearing is closed, and I'm going to ask staff if there's anything else that we have on our agenda. I don't have the agenda in front of me.
Nothing more on the agenda. I will prep the final order based upon the discussion with some minor modifications that will be submitted and for the chair to sign on your behalf. And that will start the appeal timeframe. Council, as well as participating parties, do have the opportunity to appeal this decision to City Council or have it called up. So I'll prep that for City Council, or prep it for you and convey that information to City Council that a decision has been made. Again, parties of record, the opportunity. We have everyone who's participated here by way of discussion. Issues that they submitted have been preserved either in writing or verbally. So other than that, we'll do some work. I think I have one question.
I'm sorry, you have a question? Oh, Megan, go ahead, Megan.
Yeah, for future meetings, so I've caught wind that the TSP meeting is coming up. What does that look like? And do we have another meeting coming up? Because it was always my assumption that we were going to get around to a system-wide zoning. We were broadening the West Side plan to citywide.
The work plan is going to have a TSP update to implement the narrow list of improvements that came out of the West Side concept plan. So we acknowledged or accepted kind of the fundamentals from the transportation framework, and coming out of that, we actually have to implement in the TSP. So that's going to be coming back. Kevin's working with DKS right now to scope those, to make sure that the fire department and engineers have, the technical experts like the idea that it follows the recommendations that we heard from you in council before, and kind of reconciling those. We'll have a public meeting or some sort of public engagement, and then it will come to you. And then we will work. I'm working on middle housing code right now.
So hold on 1 second, Dustin. Let me just refine. So Megan is clearly very interested in being involved in the TSP process. What should she do?
Hold on. We'll be right back and let you know.
So not happening, we'll be in maybe, okay, so, not maybe 2020, but.
Should be going 2020.
Okay.
Yeah, this is happening right now.
Okay.
So okay, and then this, housing.
And then at the same time, simultaneously, I'm working with Sarah Architects to construct some of the middle housing code, based a little bit on House Bill 2001, and based on some of the information that we took away from the cottage cluster discussion and some of that West Side discussion. Not just for West Side, but citywide. There's one zoning code, there's one, and this will provide an opportunity to include some of that middle housing in the mix of uses for the city. Not relying on the PUDs for the cluster, but providing a format on how that product looks. So that's kind of we started talking about colors on the map. This is what those colors, this is color, has no relationship to color or the West Side. It's going to be, this is some of the housing product that becomes available for everyone.
So when will that discussion be happening at Planning Commission?
I'm hoping within the next 2 months, I'll have something to you.
Okay.
That's what I
got that, Megan?
Not having appeals.
So. Okay, great. So we'll keep our fingers crossed on appeals. With that, I think we've covered everything we have to cover. I really appreciate everyone's participation in this. Doing these Zoom meetings is very difficult, but it was the applicant and the neighbors, it was just great. You did a great job of expressing yourselves. Thank you so much for doing that. You make our job easier by doing that. Mm-hmm. We apologize for having to do this over Zoom, but that's life today. So with that, I'm going to say that we are adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Arthur. Thanks, Dustin.